Some of us laugh, some of us cry, some of us lay back, watch the world go by. Some of us fear, some of us hate, some of us won't wake up till it's too late. The distance between us is a mystery to us all. The difference between us is so small. There are no answers, only questions, and we're all strangers to the truth. But in my mind's eye, I have found the reason why, and I carry the burden of the proof. Why do we fight? Why do we fall? Why do we stand there, backs against the wall? Why don't we change? Why don't we try? Why don't we turn round, help the other guy? The distance between us is a mystery to us all. The difference between us is so small. There are no answers, only questions, and we're all strangers to the truth. But in my mind's eye, I have found the reason why, and I carry the burden of the proof. And I carry the burden.
Riding. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 1st, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140, participant code 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, @nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is coming out of James, and we're going to be looking at James chapter 1. We're going to read chapter 1, probably all the way through. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greetings. My brother, count it all for joy when you fall into various temptations. Know this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Of his own will begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be kind of a first fruits of his creatures. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Wherefore lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. If any man among you seem to be religious, and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Pure religion and undefiled before God and Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the Word. Okay, that was James chapter 1. You know, I'm not sure whether I read this last week or not, but we did put this up on a front page. It was a quote, and the quote is by Joseph Stalin. Hopefully everybody here knows who he is. Joseph Stalin. America is like a healthy body, and its resistance is threefold. Its patriotism, its morality, and its spiritual life. If we can undermine these three areas, America will collapse from within. And so is it so. We the people in America are collapsing. We indeed have lost our way. And I do remember now, we did read this, I think last week or the week before. But nevertheless, our children have lost their patriotism. We watch them, they've lost their morality. Even a lot of elderly people I've seen lost their morality and have no spiritual life. They've lost their spiritual life. And that's why we are ripe for the taking. If we had those three things, we would be unconquerable. Okay. We filed an appeal and a notice of motion to release Joseph Robinson on his own recognizance out there in Montana. Joseph was arrested and convicted. He went to court twice on this, and the first jury was a hung jury. This is out in Montana. And then they went out, got another indictment, and they tried him again. This jury convicted him. Joseph is 77 years old, a disabled vet, and you forget what they call it, PC something or other. I don't remember what they call that, but he's got some problems, and he also has a working dog that is with him. But they've separated that from him, and he was put in jail, 77 years old. He's not going to survive very long. They gave him 3 years. It was 18 months for three counts, each count to be run consecutively. Their mercy was to make that consecutive. They gave him a fine of, I think, $120,000 or $130,000, something like that. Look, the fine was enough. Restitution is the fine, is enough. But and that, of course, not the fine, but restitution. They actually called it restitution. I can't believe. I guess when the government gets injured, they can get their restitution, because that's what they called it, restitution. They forgave the fine. They passed the fine over. You know, they said, oh, we'll give him a break. He's an old guy, you know. he told his lawyer he wanted to appeal. His lawyer said he would. And a couple of weeks ago, friends and family of Joseph was pushing the lawyer about getting the appeal going. And in the week of the 24th, he said he would get it going. He'd get it done. Okay. A week of the 24th came and went, and the following week came by. It was the week of the 17th. And now the week of the 24th. Now, the week of the 24th just passed by. Today is August 1st. I'm not sure. I believe August 3rd is the deadline for his appeal. If he doesn't get his appeal in by August 3rd, he gets no appeal. He has no chance at a second shot at this, no chance at other individuals, particularly judges, of course, looking at this. So he doesn't get his appeal. His lawyer, to date, has not filed the appeal. We got some calls from people out in Montana. They came in through. I think we spoke a little bit about this last week. Ali was on talking about some of the things going on out west, and I think he brought up the Montana story. But in any event, they asked us if there was anything we could do, so we decided to go in as a next friend. Through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and to file an appeal. We went to the appeal to the office today, the clerk, to file the appeal. I believe there was two individuals that went. Maybe I'll be corrected later in that, but I think it was just two. And they were greeted by a couple of people who prevented them from filing. They gave them no reason, just that they're not going to file that paper. I directed them to go to the sheriff and to give the paper to the sheriff, and I sent out to them a file on demand, and I told them to highlight the penalty for prevention of filing I'd have to read it. I don't have it right here in front of me, but there are two penalties. One is for the clerk for refusing to file, is 2 years in jail. Concealing and destroying, mutilating, and that type of thing, 20 years in jail. So we highlighted that. We gave it to the sheriff. I haven't heard back from them yet. Maybe they're on tonight. Maybe someone will tell me where we're at with that. But in any event, we told them to take it to the sheriff. Now, I don't know if the sheriff was going to be able to serve today. It was running kind of late, but probably tomorrow morning. And I told him, pay the $25 to the sheriff. You know, the sheriff will serve any paper you have for $25, maybe $20, maybe $30, depends on the county you go to, you know, where you're at. I know up in Greene County we pay $25. And so, you know, you can use him as a server. You don't have to get a private server. You can actually use the sheriff's office. Now, we're really anxious to see what they're going to do when the sheriff comes up to the window to serve the papers, whether they're going to refuse him. And if they do, hopefully he'll understand what they're doing here and see the law. We told people to highlight this law, so hopefully he'll see that and realize that, wait, these guys are breaking the law, and hopefully arrest them. But if not, that's the beginning of the setting of the stage for us to press that sheriff for an arrest on these individuals. These individuals need to be tried, and they need to pay the full penalty of the law, in my opinion. These people are terrorists to we the people. They are subverters of the United States of America. They are tyrants. They have warred against the people and warred against the Constitution for the United States of America. And they need to go to jail. I know if I was sitting on that trial jury, I would have absolutely zero mercy for them. Sure, I'll consider it. We'll talk about it. I don't think I'd be able to find it. I'm so tired of these people who do these ugly, terrible, evil things. They have no conscience. All for filthy lucre. All for money. Power and money. They need to go to jail. And we, the people, need to see to make sure that that happens. I kind of figured this as a possibility, so I filed it also from New York. We sent it out in the mail. It should be to them Wednesday morning, which is the 3rd. We sent it by certified, so they have to sign for it. And we'll see what happens there, too. In any event, these people that did try to serve it on behalf of Joseph, they're all doing affidavits. We're going to pursue this to the hilt. We're not going to let go of this. We're going to be like pit bulls. We also filed a second paper, which they didn't file down there. This was a second mailing, a separate mailing from the first mailing, also mailed out today in the same case, for a motion to release on own recognizance under Rule 9. So we served them with a notice of motion, also certified, to be signed. And it's a notice of motion of appeal from the judgment of conviction, looking for an overturning of the conviction and a motion to release. And I'm going to read that paper. It's a very short paper. It's only 3 pages. And really, if you put the reading part together, you know, I doubt it fills one page. But it's double-spaced and so on. So I'm going to read that. We're going to post all this paperwork for this particular case and other cases, which we're going to talk about tonight. Notice of motion of appeal from judgment of conviction and motion to release on own recognizance. Comes now the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, Sureties of Peace, proceeding as next friend, hereinafter Sureties of the Peace. Under Rule 1728 USCA, to move the court to release Joseph Dave Robertson, defendant on his own recognizance, under Rule 9, with a promise to appear. Defendant's counselor, Michael Donahue, public defender, indicated that on the week of the 17th and again on the 24th, that he would file an appeal as requested by the defendants, and thus far has failed to do so. And with the deadline for filing being August 3rd, 2016, family and friends requested the sureties of the peace to intervene on the defendant's behalf. Therefore, the sureties of the peace have filed an appeal and this notice of motion on behalf of the defendant. And by the way, this individual is being charged with polluting a river 105 miles away from his property where he dug the hole that they claim polluted that river. They also, Joseph hired an engineer, supposed to be a prestigious engineer. We're going to talk about him at another time. But hired an engineer to go out there to study what took place on that property, on his property, and he wrote a report, and he says there's absolutely no pollution, no problems. If anything, it's well protected from anything going off that property and leaking into anything that they claim to own. Which, by the way, the feds don't own it, and we're going to make that point too. That was brought to Joseph's attorney, he refused to file it into the court, saying that wasn't part of his strategy. So right there we see collusion. The fact that they stopped us from going in, we see collusion, we see conspiracy. We could tie the judge, all of them together in one shot, including his lawyer. I'm not sure exactly when during the case, but Joseph himself and maybe others, I don't recall. Well, I'm waiting for affidavits on this, so I don't really have the stories very clearly yet. But generally speaking, what I'm telling you is pretty much the facts. I don't know at what point in time in the case Joseph tried to file the papers himself in the courtroom. And the judge would not touch it, would not allow it to come hear him, would not look at it, and rejected it. And he did that so it doesn't show up in the docket. And that's the game that these evil people play. We need everyone in National Liberty Alliance to get to connected with our courtroom observers group. We're going to put a call out. We want phone calls to go into that clerk's office, and we need to start it tomorrow morning. Everyone can make a phone call. We need to flood that phone call. How dare they refuse? These people need to go to jail. These people are criminals. We'll have to put something together. We'll ask, we'll have someone write something up, a little bit of an information on what needs to be basically said, and then we'll get the email out. But please, everyone in National Liberty Alliance should join the Courtroom Observers Group. And if a case does come near your town and you can get away from work and get to it, you should go. Because one day you may be the guy that needs somebody. But not only that, we all could make phone calls. We can do something during our lunchtime or break or whatever. We could all make a phone call. And depending on the time zone, you could do it in the evening, out here on the East Coast, something on the West Coast, we can call in at 6 o'clock. It's only 3 o'clock there. So come on, everybody. We need to get busy here. Only the people can save America. The question is, what are you going to do? Are you going to save America or what? We need to do something. All right, let's get back to this paper. The sureties of peace have also heard compelling evidence. The sureties of the peace have also heard compelling evidence, continues to collect compelling evidence, and thereby are preparing a brief in support of defendant's relief from judgment. The sureties of the peace are confident of success of said relief under Rule 60B2 for relief from a final judgment. Minute entry on sentencing is attached. On the grounds of newly discovered evidence, fraud, and vindictive prosecution, thereby moving this court to release the defendant on own recognizance, while preparing said briefs in support thereof. And by them barricading the clerk's desk and preventing the people from filing this paper proves vindictive prosecution without any doubt. We have lots and lots of affidavits should be coming in on this particular case with stories that will curl your hair up. Statements of fact in support of release. The defendant is a citizen of the United States. I know a lot of people get upset with that one, but let's let them rob the word from us. And being a citizen of the United States, you're really a citizen of your state, but you can choose any state you want. Okay, but we'll discuss that another day. I know we've talked about this. We're not going to yield to the fiction. We're not going to give reality by yielding to the fiction. Now, we're going to call the fiction what it is, a fraud. And they haven't got the guts to step up to talk about their fiction straight out. They got to hide behind dark places. So the defendant is a citizen of the United States and does not pose a danger to any other person of the community. The nature and circumstances of the offense charged was not a crime of violence, terrorism, nor did it involve minor victim, controlled substances, firearm, explosives, or destructive device. Defendant is a long time domiciled in the community with family ties, deep roots, and much community support. Defendant has no past adverse conduct history relating to drugs or alcohol abuse or criminal history. Recent records concerning appearances at court proceedings during the trial and awaiting sentences have already proven to the court that the defendant will not flee during pending appeal. Defendants were convicted and sentenced for building stock ponds on his property. Defendant is a 77-year-old disabled veteran with health issues under a doctor's care and was in the hospital emergency room the day after he was arraigned due to heart issues. Incarceration is physically and emotionally stressful, uncomfortable, and takes a toll on anyone. Furthermore, considering that the defendant suffers from PTSD, that's what I was looking for before, and has been separated from his service dog, Sasha, and because of defendant's age and other health issues, the defendant, if left incarcerated, runs an extremely high risk of premature death, making his sentence a life sentence. Considering the alleged crime, it appears to the sureties of the peace that the monetary restitution for the alleged damage was more than sufficient, and appears that it will render the defendant and his wife poverty-stricken during the twilight of their lives. By the court also adding incarceration, which society presumes to be a deterrence and correction, in other words, rehabilitation, makes this not only cruel and unusual punishment in this case, but also moot. Dated today, August 1st, 2016, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury Foreman, signed and sent certified mail. This is happening across the nation. It's happening everywhere. I hear so many stories all the time, over and over and over. Every day I hear these things. It's time to step up and do something about it. The Committees of Safety is the first step for the people. Okay, let's move on to our next. Carl, are you here, by the way? I was trying to get hold of you before. Carl, are you in the room?
I am here, yes.
You hear me, eh?
I can hear you.
Okay. Hey, listen, do me a favor. I don't know if you know Ali, but if you don't know Ali, maybe connect with him through Jan or even through Gary. But what I'd like you to do is up at File Depot. I was up there looking today, but I just didn't have any more time to, you know, dig around to figure out how to do it. I forget how to do this. I want to give him access to a file I put up there under the top-level folders called Northwest. Okay. And under Northwest, there's Montana, Nevada, and Oregon. Those are three files underneath that. Mm-hmm. And I'd like him to have access to be able to upload files to that area. So could you do that for me?
I can, yes.
Okay. Do you know Ollie?
I do, yeah. Is this Ollie from Colorado?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so do that as soon as you can. He's got a lot of files to send to me. We got a lot of files, I understand, so we've got to start digging through it. Okay, let me move on to our next step here. Also, I was up on the committee on the directory, and I didn't see the committee's phone contacts up on a directory. If you could try to get that up there, too. I know they have their own place for their own phone numbers, but they should be – everybody that we have numbers anywhere on the site should be on a directory.
Okay.
I think we spoke about this before, but we dropped the ball on it. So let's see if we can't get that. And also, the names and phone numbers of the federal districts need to get onto there. I know we have a list somewhere for that, if it could be repeated on that directory also. And also, we have on the Save America page, we have the list of the contacts of all the people who are out there building COSs in their own states. So if we can get that on there, too. That directory should really be able to find – people should be able to go to the directory and find everybody there. But there's other ways they can find them, too. But let's see if we can't get that all together and make it look nice and give enough information for people to contact. Okay. Thanks. Okay. We're gearing up now for the wildlife preserve case in Oregon and the Bundy Ranch case in Nevada. We're just waiting for affidavits. We got a lot of information already collected. We've got more coming in. We have also have some unique witnesses, professional witnesses. So at least one, maybe more. We also have some news media out that way. I believe in Oregon and Nevada, possibly. I don't know, and also maybe Montana. I'm not sure, but I do know we have some friendly news media out there that will run our stuff. We need to run it really hard. We're going to really start pushing down on these cases. So, again, if everyone can get really, really connected to the Court Watchers group, even if it's just for responding when they're requesting for phone calls, okay, please, we need to do this, especially when we start pushing on these cases in Montana and in Nevada and in Oregon. We need the people to start getting on the phones when we send them the message out. We need to put pressure on these people. Okay, we are still continuing our plan with ham. I've got a big list of things to be done, and that ham radio is on that list, and I really did anticipate to get to it this week, but there are so many things that have happened in the past week, and so many other things have taken precedence over that, and a lot of other things that I really wanted to get done this past week and didn't get done. But we are still on that. It is a major plan for we the people to be able to communicate across this nation. Everybody needs to be connected on the right channels. You need to be able to travel your nation and pick people up locally, have certain stations, and as you run from county to county, it shifts over to that county. We all need to be on that certain wave. So we need to set that up. And we also we need to be able to receive national transmitting and national liberty. And there's also a plan which we'll share with everyone. We'll get this flyer up on the website, which we still haven't created the page. I did collect a lot of information, just haven't got the page up yet. But I'm really working on trying to get it up this week. But there is a page when times are bad. Okay. In order to really preserve your battery power, there's the three-hour plan or the three-hour rule. You turn your clock on at the three-hour point, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock. Okay? So all of us know that if there's anything important to broadcast, we'll be broadcasting at the top of the 3 hour. So you turn your radio on for 3 to 5 minutes, and if nothing is broadcasted, then you shut it down. You turn it on if you need it to travel, and you stay on the lower levels, the lower channels, and you'll be able to communicate from county to county as you move through the states. I mean, we're really working up a really good plan on communications, and it all really stems on really the work of the Committees of Safety and getting this information out to all of the people in the Committees of Safety and to just get this message out. National Liberty Alliance, during the emergency, will be broadcasting every evening at a particular time on a particular, I don't know that I should call it station, but I forget what they call it, but frequency, certain frequency. So we'll have that plan out. Everybody needs to get it. And as time goes on, people need to be downloading everything they can off of National Liberty Alliance that they think is important. get onto your computers so you can continue your education, continue information, and we will continue to communicate, we will continue to organize, and we will take this nation back, and we will put these people in jail. Okay. We're also getting up, the ham radios, okay. All right, the Committee of Safety this Thursday, we're going to be talking this Thursday about the charter and the resolution. An extremely important instructional meeting this Thursday, 9 p.m. It should not take longer than an hour. It should take maybe, I know I always say I want to make this quick. Let's get out of here in a half hour, and I usually take the whole hour. But I have been really starting to push to get out of there within the hour or 5 or 10 minutes over because I don't want to hold people over too long. But I think we're probably going to spend 15 to 20 minutes on each. The first order, you know, in order to get a committee of safety going, you have to have a charter. And so that's kind of the first order of business is get a group of people together and elect some officers. And then at that point, create a charter, which really tells your purpose, and then create a resolution. Then befriend the sheriff, work diligently to get him on board with what we're doing so that he even would sign his signature on our resolution in agreement with the Committee of Safety. That's the goal we're heading for. Once you get that, that's when you go to town, to city, every town and city in your county. And when you do that, you can even go to the villages and hamlets. And of course, don't forget the county itself, the county government. Let's get all the local government on board here. After all, we the people, through the Committees of Safety, are going to do the people's business, which is our unalienable right. And we're going to talk about the power and the authority of the committee, by what authority the Committee of Safety operates and thinks that it could do what it pleases. We're going to show you the authority on that on Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. If you can't make that meeting, look, we're posting that up on our website. I know one of the places we're posting is on the Committee of Safety page, and it also posts on to Saving America page. So post to two places, okay? Everybody should be listening to that meeting. Right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 postings up there. This will be the 9th. It's extremely important that you listen to these. Last week we spoke about the Committee of Safety Handbook. We talked a couple of different things over the past weeks. A couple of weeks ago we talked how the Committee of Safety morphed into the committee men. And this week, this Thursday, we're going to show you by what authority we act upon, what our founding fathers had acted upon, and what right we have, and how much in history supports what we're doing here. Okay. This Wednesday, August 3rd, we will be giving a Committee of Safety presentation at 7 p.m., and at 7:30 p.m., we will be then creating Committees of Safety. We're going to create the Committee of Safety in Dutchess County, and every other county close by that joins us, and at the 7:30 part of the meeting, willing to go forward, we're going to execute the Committees of Safety for all those counties all in one night in that one room. It's going to be in Poughkeepsie, New York. It's going to be, where is the address here? Oh, okay, 141 Boardman Avenue, B-O-A-R-D-M-A-N Road. I'm sorry, not Avenue, Boardman Road, Poughkeepsie, New York. If you go onto our calendar, it is on our calendar. So go up to the top of our page underneath the blue bar on the right-hand side. You'll see tech support, my account, unsubscribe, add event, calendar, and log out. Click on calendar, and you will find the event. You can click on the event, and you'll get the details. Okay? I spoke to some people from Connecticut today, and I was invited out to Connecticut. So I'm going to be posting soon as we can get a date and a place. We're heading out to Connecticut. I'm going to take a trip to Connecticut. I'd like to go to Farmington, which is the center of the state, right off the main road, 84, that goes right through the center of Connecticut. Farmington, Connecticut is no more than an hour from any place in Connecticut. Connecticut's not a very big state, so I don't care if you lived in any of the four corners of Connecticut. If you were traveling to Farmington, you can get there in 1 hour. I mean, maybe it's a 50 to 60-mile trip. So that's presuming you're traveling 60 miles an hour. Some of those roads are only 45 up and down, so maybe it'll take you an hour and 20 minutes. But look, it, well worth it. We can do all of Connecticut in 1 day. You know, when we were doing the grand juries, we did Connecticut in 1 day in one place. We can do it again. Actually, we did a couple of meetings in Connecticut. We had two places, I think. So we got the whole state in two places. We're going to do it in one place. And all we need is a couple of people from each county to get this going. As a matter of fact, we could do it with one. We can initiate it. Of course, you got to go over things as you build the group up. And we're going to talk about this on Thursday. I'm not going to talk about this now. We will give the details of how that works. And we're going to look at the papers, what it takes to put together a charter. And what a charter really means, what it's about, and also the resolution, how important this resolution is. This is what's going to really protect our country, is this resolution. If we can get this resolution in 2,000-plus counties in America, we saved America. If the people are diligently working on this. But you got to work on this. You got to get involved. Don't think the other guy is doing it. It's not enough. We need you. If America gets lost and you've done nothing and been doing nothing the past year or two or however long you've been with us and listening and you've been doing nothing, then remember this, it's your fault if we lose her. It's your fault. It's not going to be my fault. And a lot of people that are doing what has to be done, it's not going to be their fault. It'll be the fault of the people who refuse to get up and take on some weight. So let's get this done. Let's do what has to be done. Many hands make light work. You know, you see the Marines, they pick up a log. One person can't pick it up, but you get four or five Marines on that, they'll pick up that big log and they'll run down the sand in the beach, you know, the beach sand with it. They'll carry it out onto the water and bring it in. And, you know, it's all really just exercise and training. And but one Marine can't do it. But four or five Marines working together can get the job done. Many hands make light work. We have a heavy weight. There's some lifting we can't get done because you have not jumped in to help us. So please, let's get going here. Any of these meetings that you miss, including the Monday night meetings, look at, if you can't make it, listen to the audio. Come on, you got how many hours during the week? You can listen to the audio. People drive to work. Put it on an MP3 player. Stick it on your radio. When you exercise, stick it on an MP3 player. When you're walking, driving, whatever. Come on. Let's get educated. Okay. New York, let's go. Come on. We need to get New York done. Okay? I'm ready to tour. I'm going to be making some phone calls. I hope everybody's going to get involved here. We got a lot of people in New York. If everyone in New York that is connected with us came to a couple of meetings across the nation as we move across the nation, then we'd be done in New York in a week. I can do two stops on a Saturday on Western New York. I could do two stops during the week on the northern part of New York. And I could do another one or two down in the southern part of New York, and we would be done. You're going to have to travel to a couple of counties over from where you're living. And other people could pick these things up and just duplicate what it is that Gerard and I are doing by telling the story. We went down to Harlem this past Saturday. We had a good response down there, and we talked with Pastor Manning, and he was very excited about what we're doing, and he wants to support us, and he wants to get this going in the city. We had people coming in from other places, we need to pick up and get this job done. Let's go, New York. New England, let's get going up there, too, because look, at you got a couple of states up there. You got the lower part of Maine. You got New Hampshire. You got Vermont. And you got Massachusetts. And you got Rhode Island. We'll take care of Connecticut for you, and then you can connect with them. But let's get those other states together. Goodness, you could do something in the lower part of New Hampshire that's very convenient to all of those states. All of those states. And you can get, you could do two places and get the whole, all those states done in one day. Let's make the connection. Give a call to Jan, get the phone numbers and the connections of the people. Go out to highlight, the COS and come down to Saving America. And on the bottom of that page, you will find connect with others building committees of safety in your state. Find your state. We have a couple of people in Alabama willing to spearhead this program. We've got people in Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, and so on. Right on down the line, connect with them. Let's get this job done. And the leaders, the leaders that are involved with this, the state coordinators, federal district leaders, connect with Jen, connect with Gary. Get the phone numbers of the people in your state. We'll give you the phone numbers, give you a list of names and all the phone numbers. Connect with these people. Call them up. Get them activated. Get them reactivated. Get them excited. Get them out to the meeting. Get the job done. Let's get it done. We have no more time. We're out of time. We've got to move. Let's go, New England. Okay, we are writing two papers for Congress and the judiciary. Well, we should have filed these papers already by now, but we haven't because we haven't got the money. We just don't have enough money. Look at, I'm tired of asking for money, but I'm not going to stop. Okay, if those who don't understand that money makes the world go around, that things cost money to get it done, we have to buy stamps and envelopes. We have to do these things. We have to serve hard copy people. We have to serve hard copies to people. You know, we're already faxing to people, but the hard copy is the one with their name on it. The hard copy coming to them. A paper that is filed in the federal court with their name on it, that's to them. That they'll read the paper, more likely to read the paper. We got to make it official. We got to let them know quite a few things. Now is the time to tell them some strong, strong things and to let it know. Let it be known. We the people know what's happening. We're watching. We know who our friends are. We see who the enemy is. The olive branch is still out. There's time to reach off towards that olive branch. We'll give it to you. Let's get going and work with us. But when the deadline date comes, we're going to try you for treason if you haven't taken the olive branch. This is the message that needs to get out now. We have to put stress on these people. We have to really wake them up, shake them up, whatever you want to call it, okay? Come on, people, let's get this job done. We need to get it done. Time is short. I just want to remind you that time is short. Could end this month. Well, I've heard August is the month. You know, we just came to August 1st. I've heard August is the month. I've also heard September is the month and October also. So, you know, let's hope more towards October. Let's hope that maybe they get frightened and put it off till next year. Well, we will really solidify then, won't we? If you're doing something now, if you're not doing anything, shame on you. Don't you love your parents? Don't you love your children? Don't you love your neighbors? Don't you love your wife or your husband or your children? Come on. You're not too busy. I don't care. You're not too busy to save America. Because there's nothing, whatever it is that you're hanging on to that you don't have time to leave, you're not going to have it anymore. When the lights go down, go out, the grid goes down, whatever it is that you think's been keeping you away from doing the thing to save what you got, it's too late. You've lost it then anyway. Come on, America. Let's get this job done. I don't know if anybody, Gerard, I see you're here. Have you seen any questions go by? I haven't even touched my email in a week.
Yeah, there's just a couple of them there.
You want to read them or anything?
Let me see. Let me get back to where I was here. Hang on a minute. There was
Jan's away for the weekend, and today he'll be back tomorrow. And Gary's trapped. He'll be away for a while, too. But go ahead.
Yeah, we got a question from Jim. And he says, on the 25th conference, into the call, we had a question for Brent about, is an acquittal and a hung jury the same thing? He said, in Brent's response, Brent's replied that if the jury acquits a man, then our courts say that he can be tried again, no double jeopardy. Is the answer to this question by Brent contrary to the Fifth?
Well, he did not say that.
No, I know he did. He said that they can't try him again because the rule is
well,
no.
He also said that he had not really studied that, but he doesn't believe that they can, and that's my belief too. And since then, I have studied that, and it's absolute. Look at a hung jury; it's done. Person walks, you go after them again. That's double jeopardy. That's a fact, and I'm going to prove
well,
that. If they
acquit, that's a verdict. That's not guilty. They can't try him again.
Oh, acquit. They can't. And look at once the jury is called into session. Okay.
Right.
Look at go read. Let's read this. Let me pull out my Constitution book here. I should have one right here. And let me read this. Listen very, very carefully to the words. And believe me, I've done a lot of good research on this. I got some great information. I'm writing a powerful paper on this. And I'm also going to speak in the paper their game that they've used to play their game to control our courts, to get their conviction and try us over and over and over again until they get what they want. Okay? These SOBs. Okay. Let's see. Which amendment is it? I think it's the Seventh Amendment. Okay, here it is. In suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. That wasn't the right one, but this here, common law, there it is right there. Any case that is being reexamined, in other words, there's an appeal going up on it. It must go forward through the rules of the common law, which means it went through the rules of the common law in the first place. It's under law. Okay, but that wasn't it. Let me see if I can find where it's at. Let's see. Respect to the Constitution. It's the 9th. Well, it's not the 10th, so 6th. Well, a fifth, that's where it's got to be in double jeopardy, fifth, yeah. Okay, here it is. Here it is. Let me read from the beginning, okay? No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or the militia, when in actual service in times of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense. Now here's the key: to be twice put in jeopardy. That's the key. Put in jeopardy. Twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Nor shall be compelled, and so on and so forth. So, when does a person go into jeopardy? They go into jeopardy the moment that the jury convenes. When that jury is pulled together, that person's life and limb is in jeopardy. And once that process goes through, no matter how it ends, if it ends with an acquittal, or if it ends with a hung jury, okay, obviously if it ends with a conviction, he's convicted. But if it ends with a hung jury, he was in jeopardy during that time period. He cannot go through another jeopardy. There's no double jeopardy. Nor shall a person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Clear as a bell, okay? And as a matter of fact, here in the United States and in common law England, and it's always been this way, you know, look at it. You get into the way back when, okay? If the jury got together and they become hung and they start complaining and whining, they'll cut their food off. Get the decision made, people. Get it done. Okay? In other words, there is no authority for any judge to call for a hung jury. That jury is to continue there for 30 minutes, 30 hours, 30 days, or 30 weeks. They don't come out until that decision is made. That's their duty. And they have to hammer it out and just go over and over and over again until they come up with a decision. Even if they come to the decision and say, boy, we are just hung. We're never going to agree. So why, we're going to have to agree to let this guy go. Let's let him loose. Okay? If they all agree to that agreement, there you go. They have to come to an agreement. It is not lawful for a judge to intervene and call for a hung jury. So any jury that's been called for a hung, then the state stuck its fingers in there, shouldn't have done it. That person walks free. They cannot be tried again. Period. End of subject. And there is huge amount of evidence on that. So we're gonna look at that soon because we're writing a paper on that, and we're gonna make it clear. We're not gonna let them pull the wool over our eyes. Any other questions out there? Gerard, unmute yourself. It's not healthy to talk to yourself.
There was another one here by Ann Dunlap on the Seventh Amendment. I don't quite understand what she's getting to. It says, is the Seventh Amendment an individual right or a public right, and what is the basis of your answer?
Well, it's an unalienable right. It's a right of every person. It's individual.
Right. So I would say it's individual rights. If you think it's a public right, you're overthinking
There's
it.
There's no such thing as a public right. Yeah.
Yeah. What's a public right? Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, well, the government likes to give civil rights, so maybe that's a public right.
Right.
You know, we don't have civil rights. We have unalienable rights. No, we don't have constitutional rights. We have unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. That's what we have. Any other
right.
questions?
That's the only one, the only two that I see here.
Okay, I just want to remind everybody one more time. Time is short. Let's go, America. New York, let's get it done here. Let's get New York done. I'm traveling the state. Let's get out there and help me. Let's get this done. Let's protect ourselves. Let's protect our families. Let's protect our towns, our villages. Let's protect our neighbors. Let's protect people. Let's do the honorable thing. You know what's going on. You've heard the call. It is your duty to respond. You don't have the right or the authority for yourself to deny or ignore or figure someone else is going to do it. It's your duty. You need to do it now. We need to remind each other how serious this is. Time is done. It's short. I don't know. Whatever we have, we're really being given extra time. Let's rest in God on this thing and... Yeah, go ahead. You want to say something?
The unfortunate thing is we have an election, and they're using that as a dog and pony show to keep us distracted. You know, Obama said he didn't think he was going to have enough money to make the checks in August. Nobody's talking about the money going down. They're over there playing between Hillary and Trump all this crazy stuff that's not going to affect us, really, in the short term. If the money goes down and the food goes off the shelves, who's talking about that? Nobody's talking about that, and there's a reason they're not talking about it. You know, they're keeping us busy with this dog and pony show, and nobody's doing anything to prepare. And I think that's what it's about, keeping the masses, giving them the bread and circuses, so we all get lackadaisical and watch the stupid television with the stupid remarks going back and forth that don't mean a hill of beans, and who's saying what about emails and who's hacking who and all this stuff that at the end of the day, When the interest payment is not paid and the money's foreclosed upon, it's done. You're done. And all this other stuff didn't mean a thing. And that's all it is. It's just a dog and pony show. Look, you should shut the TV off the day before the election, see who made it to the end, and we kind of know who's going to be there. And either you vote for them or you don't. And don't waste your time watching all this crap that they're feeding us because it's designed to lull you into inaction. That's my opinion anyway. Thank you.
Yeah. Also, you know, last week we spoke a little bit about these generators. There's plasma generators out there, and I'm somewhat familiar. I tried to create one once before. This one is quite different, I understand, than the one that I tried to build, which was very tough. And I'm not sure I've met anybody that has success in that, but we're hearing that there is success in this. We don't know. We're waiting for the plans ourselves, and we understand it's only about $150, $200 for the materials. Gerard and I spoke about this, and maybe there'll be others working with Gerard and I, but we're going to try to build one ourselves and see how it goes. If it works, we're going to let everybody know. We'll let everybody know where to get the plans at, and if it works, you should build it. I understand you can build a couple of these things, and I'm not sure. I don't want to. I'm ignorant in this, so I'm not sure how they would connect into your system if you're going to connect many of them, because one isn't enough to run your house, but two or three should be. And I'm not sure how that connection would be. But we're going to look into this, and we'll let everybody know if this is real. And that's the thing people are going to want to do. Look, at you got to get yourself a radio. And the radios that we're looking at right now are about $50 a piece. Okay, you might be able to find them for a few bucks cheaper, but really, you should buy them through us. We need the money. We need money. So we're going to sell them for a reasonable price that everyone else is selling them for, but we're also going to sell them with an extra service, which I don't have all the details on. These things have to be programmed very individually for each county. And so the person that's involved with me, which I don't know if he's on tonight, I apologize for not talking the last few days. I've just been totally exhausted and so busy. I've been wanting to pick the phone up to get back to him and really settle this deal and get things up. So hopefully by next Monday I'll have things up on the Internet and people will be able to go out and buy them. I'm not sure what the price is going to be, but it's going to be additional money for anybody who wants to get the radio programmed, okay, for their neighborhood, for their counties, okay, because you need to pick up the necessary frequencies for the different things. So I'm really talking out of ignorance at the moment, so I can't articulate this well. I think what we'll do is we'll have this person come in. We'll see if he can't come in next Monday. He's a member of ours, been a member for quite some time with us. But maybe we'll have him speak and teach us about this and let us know how things work on this. And we'll kind of snip it at, yeah.
I can tell you that the $20 or $30 he's charging for the programming is well worth it, because if you had to
go. Well, I think it's going to be more than that. It's going to be more than that, because he says he's got to put a good hour in it, and it depends on the area. But I don't want to touch prices because I'm not sure. But whatever,
right, but
it is,
whatever it is, it would take you hours to do it if you didn't know what you were doing or how to get the information. So that way there you take it out of the box and it works in your local area. I mean, it works on those channels that you want to be on, you know, on the emergency channels.
Right, and people want to buy more than one. You know, you're going to want to buy, you know, for a couple, for your family. When someone's traveling, you need someone at home, maybe the wife is at home or whatever, and you're traveling, and you need to be able to communicate. And we'll also be able to communicate to each other in our county. Anybody that's got that radio and has it turned on at the time, you can communicate. And remember, everybody will be turning it on the third hour, okay? 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Everybody will be turning it on for that first of the 3 hours for up to 5 minutes, and then shut it down again to preserve your battery. Of course, you know, you can plug it into your car. If you're moving, you can keep it on, and others may be keeping it on, but you can catch people at a certain time. You know, you can let other people know you're traveling and, hey, you know, keep your radios on during a certain time or whatever. For whatever. The thing is as you're traveling, anybody who's connected with us in any county across America will be able to make connections on those lower channels. So this is an extremely important connection here that we're talking about, not to mention also the ham part of it, and also we have the trunk. And anybody who doesn't know what the trunk is, it's the 911 system that's been set up across this entire nation. Okay, they have fire department on there, they got police department, emergency rescue, the ambulances, and other emergency services that are on the trunk. Okay, and there's also certain you know, frequencies that are put aside for an emergency, a county emergency, a state emergency, or a national emergency. Anyway, that's the trunk. And I have a radio in my office that's a trunk. And so, you know, I used to turn on and listen for the fires that are close by, you know, and I'd go check out the fires a day or two after, because I was a contractor, and give my card and give them a free estimate. But, you know, the trunk is a... an important thing to tap into. Everybody should be able to do that. Okay. Any other questions there, by the way, Gerardo? That was the last.
No, that was it.
Okay. I can't say this too many times. We are in desperate need of money. We can't do anything extra. Matter of fact, we still we haven't been caught up our bill, so we're not unable to send anything extra into the mail. Can't send nothing to Congress. Can't send anything to the 94 courts. We will be filing papers, out in Oregon and all those cases, and even that costs money. I mean, it doesn't come for free, you know. So please, come on. Anybody who hasn't been giving on a monthly basis, $5 or more, you know, I mean, a lot of people I'm sure could give $20 a month or even more. Come on, let's get something done. Oh, one other thing. There's a few people who have been sending, and I've been throwing it in a box. I just haven't had time to even go down, sit down, and go through it and send the checks back to the people. But for quite a few months now, people are still sending checks in the name of Tradewinds. That was one of my company names I was using for a while in the beginning because I wanted to put it into a corporate name. I didn't want to collect money in my personal name. And until I got this trust up, National Liberty Alliance. So we are getting some checks. My bank was cashing them, but we got somebody with the bank, and they gave me a hard time, and it went up. They decided that they're not going to do that no more. So I have checks from Tradewinds. I got to get around to it to send the checks back to these people, let them know we weren't able to cash it. They won't cash it anymore. So anybody that sends us in the name of Tradewinds, you have to put National Liberty Alliance or NLA on it. That's the only checks they'll cash. Okay. One last thing. We need money. All right. I'm pretty much done. And is Brenton? I didn't see Brenton yet. He's calling in without. Let me go over to Q&A. Please, nobody go into the, Q&A, please. Brent, if you're out there, hit star 6 to come into the Q&A, and we'll unmute you. Maybe you're traveling and you got the code or whatever. I don't know. We've got Ollie in there. Okay, we'll get to you in a second, Ollie. Anybody from Connecticut here? You can get into the queue if you want to share your name and phone number with others in Connecticut, okay? Because I want to do Connecticut. I want to do Connecticut quick. We can do all 8 counties real quick. We also will make a plan. You don't have sheriffs out there, but you do have, I think they call them marshals. Let's talk about a plan with them, okay? They're supposed to be taking over the sheriff's job, so we'll talk with them. I see Sharon out here, so I'm going to unmute Sharon in a minute. Any other people from Connecticut, hit the star 6 and get into the queue. Nobody else get into the queue, just Connecticut people. Sharon, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, John. How
I don't
you
know
doing?
If maybe you can, good, maybe you can spearhead with Crystal out there on a whatever day you want to do it. I presume a Saturday is probably the best for you guys, in the afternoon or something. But I'll come out. I'd like to go to Farmington in that neighborhood because it's the center of Connecticut, and a lot of people should be able to get there, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to come out just once, and for the counties we miss, the other counties can help and do those. But would you like to spearhead that with Crystal?
Yes, we were talking about it today, and Delio is trying to call me too, so I know that he was trying to get with me about the same thing because
right.
Crystal related that. And I went on the website and was trying to find other names like, you know, Mabel, Marson, who's not far from...
We have 100 and some odd people in Connecticut. If you connect with me tomorrow, I have the list. I can cut and paste and give it to you. Okay?
All right.
You're on Skype, aren't you?
I have it, but I'm not really good with it.
Okay. What's your
Sorry.
Email? What's your email?
SConroy50. Oh, wait a minute. My email on the website is SharonRita888, no capitals, at Gmail.
SHARON, Sharon?
Right. Yeah,
and
Rita.
And what's the second? RETIA?
No, RITA.
RITA 888.
At gmail.com. Yeah, and that's on the website for NLA. That's...
Okay, what I will do is I will email you tomorrow. I had a busy morning. I got a doctor's appointment late morning, and I'll probably be back here in the afternoon.
Okay.
But in the afternoon sometime, I'll try to do this, and I'll get to, but sometime tomorrow, I hope I do. And if you don't get it, call me. You got to push me, because I just get lost in lists of things that I need to get done. But I will send you every member in Connecticut. I'll give you their first name and their phone number, and you guys can start ringing the bells, you know?
Okay. And, you know, while I have you on the phone, I did email those documents you requested again for Crystal's foreclosure.
Oh, okay. All right. And you want to
I think
Gerardo
I sent
also?
Three of them in a row.
Did you send them to Gerard, too?
No, but I can.
Yeah, Gerard at National Liberty Alliance, G-E-A-R-D.
Okay.
So send it to
yes.
him, too, just in case. Now, I haven't checked my mail in days, maybe a week. And over the weekend, we've been out, we've down the studio.
I sent it to intake.
Oh, it went to intake. Oh, okay.
That's
and,
where I sent it last
yeah,
time,
should
too.
Have it.
Yeah.
So I'll check with them, Jim and Kelly.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All righty.
All right, so we'll talk soon, and as soon as you can get something going, again, I'd like to get on that 84 corridor somewhere, right off the 84. Libraries are nice. And centrally located as best you can figure, and then let's call everyone we can, every Liberty group and different groups and people and friends and neighbors and all of the National Liberty Alliance people, and let's get a real big thing going. And we, in that one day, we will show the plan, 30 minutes to show it, and then it'll take us maybe 20 minutes to do the charter. And 20 minutes to do the resolution. We'll have a Q&A. So 2.5 hours we should be able to get done if we stay on business and on point. And then everybody should be able to walk away. Their next meeting would be to orient themselves around what they have done and collect more people and get a meeting going and start preparing for a meeting, in your case, the marshals. And so you want to – I'm suggesting everybody starting a committee of safety – should come every single week. You should have a meeting until you get to the point where you get the sheriff on board. Once that's accomplished, you go back off a little, but now the job is to hit every town and every city in your county to bring them on board. But you want to get the sheriff on board and get his signature onto the resolution with you. That's the
right.
most important thing.
Okay? Oh, that sounds great. That sounds
okay, Sharon.
So good.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll be getting hold of Crystal. I'm surprised she's not on. But I tried to call her, and she wasn't home. So that was at 9.
All right.
And, that would be real good, John. Thank you so much.
Give me
a call now, or I'll call you.
You call me. You got to push me.
Okay.
You got to remind me.
All righty. And Gerard. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, let's see who else. Let me go to
Ollie. John?
Here. Yeah.
We got just a real quick thing that was in the email that I forgot. This fella is asking about printing stuff off our website, and he said some of the things are copyrighted, which I don't know anything about, and he says how does he get permission, our permission, to print those, and
what's
wants to know.
Copyrighted?
I don't have no idea.
We may have that word on a few things. And the only thing we have, we may have that word, but if we do have it, we should have on it that people can print it and do whatever they want as long as they don't cut it up, you know?
Right, right.
I know the handbook is done that way.
Well, he's trying to do handbooks, and he went to a print shop. They wanted $1,000 for 500 Juris handbooks. He had 50 printed, costing him $750, which means they're about $15 each. So, I mean, I don't know.
Money.
It is a lot of money, and I know we can't order them until we get enough money to do a big order. Because when we get enough,
I talked with someone, I think it was today, and who says they might be able to get us some money, some real money. And if that's true, if we can do that, then we will go out and get maybe a couple of 100,000 books printed up again and get them out there. Because we were able to sell them for 69 cents a piece.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
By the hundred. For $69, that's everything included, delivery and everything.
69 cents a piece for 100 books.
For 100 books delivered.
Yeah, so that was a good deal. So, I mean, look, if you think you got money coming, this fellow should wait a little bit.
Yes, definitely should wait. And You know, look at, you know, go out. I'll tell you what's most important is to go out and buy the Constitution books, okay? Because that is really a pocket, you know, those pocketbooks are really important to get to everybody, especially sheriffs, everybody in your group, and so on and so forth. So you can go out to, what is it, CC, let me see if I can find that. What is that website? Constitutional, CC something.
Yeah.
National NCCS, .net, yes, NCCS.net. Now, I buy them 1,000 at a time. Now, these people, I spoke with these people when I was printing, you know, to find out, you know, because they sell their books at a very good price, and I wanted to try to do it the same. I use the same printer that they use, but the difference is I'll order 50,000, they'll order 1,000,000, okay? When they go for 1,000,000, the price is way, way down there, okay? 50,000, 100,000, you know, as you get more and more, I can get it cheaper and cheaper. Right now, we buy 50,000 to 100,000 at a time. When we bought it last time, we bought 50,000, and we're able to sell it for 69 cents. But those handbooks, that the Constitution handbooks that they're selling, okay, they're selling them something like 32 cents a book or something like that, real cheap. And you can buy 1,000 dirt cheap. I mean, you even get a better break when you buy 1,000. You can buy the 100, 200, 500, and 1,000. And that's what I did. I bought 1,000 for a really good price, a couple hundred bucks or something, 300 bucks, whatever it was. And so I got boxes of them things. Whenever I go anywhere, I always throw them in the car and I hand out Constitution books. And I still have some of the handbooks out that I hand out, but I'm not selling them anymore because I'm out. I mean, I just got some for when I travel. But we'll try to get them back up. I'd like to revisit that book and make some changes in it. And get it republished again. We need money. So if we're able to get some real money soon, where we'll be able to really put a couple of people on a payroll to really get some real, real work done here, that would be really good. And we're going to try to set that up, see what happens. Somewhere out there, there's got to be someone with real money that realizes that America's going down and the money's going to be worthless anyway. So why not help us somewhere? But maybe God wants us to continue limping along, doing it, you know, begging and borrowing without stealing now. And, you know, getting the job done. We'll do it. So, okay. Let me go over to Ali. Hang on a minute. Ali, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Hello. Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted.
Okay, I need to give an update on Missoula, and then after that I would like to give talk about Committee of Safeties for a minute or two.
Sure, go right ahead. You got the mic.
It's been a long day, I'll tell you what. I was hit with Oregon stuff, Nevada stuff, and all this put together. Short story, by the time we got all our ducks lined up, we were out of time. And David Lamb, he had Gavin Sims' brother with him. Those are the guys who were there. They boogied to Portland. So Kat's alone again, and she's back home. She only got 3 hours sleep last night. She's been working her tail off, but she is going to put together that affidavit on the clerks and get that notarized and sent to you. She's going down bright and early in the morning to talk to the sheriff and give him the file on demand, and she's trying to get a witness to go down with her, you know, which is a good idea. And when
Ollie, just remember this one thing. You might want to get a hold of her and let her know. The file on demand is not for the sheriff. You know, that's just the top cover for the paperwork. But the file on demand is for those people. Okay.
Yeah.
But if she highlights in yellow that file on demand, she highlights it with a yellow marker, that area where it lays out the law, 20 years in jail or 2 years in jail. 2 years in jail if the clerk won't file, and if they obstruct conceal, 20 years in jail. 20 years in jail. And I know I will push for 20 years in jail.
Okay, as I understand it, the sheriff walks in with he's going to have, you know, four or five copies with that file on demand on top where they've got to read
right.
that first.
Right, he only needs one. Right, he only needs one on top. Yep.
Okay, now, she's going to do that bright and early in the morning, but let me say this. Out west here, the phony judges got their propaganda out, and they almost killed us. The general opinion is out here among a lot of the patriots and judges and whatever that common law grand jury, they have no teeth, just ignore them, they go away. It is imperative that we hit this case with everything we got. And this is an opportunity. That God has given us gifts on a silver platter, and we've got to go. And I'm going to be very interested to see what happens tomorrow. See if they buckle and file them. I got a feeling they will. That they might just buckle and go ahead and file them. I hope they do, and that'll be a monkey off our back. But
we still want the affidavits because we're still going to pursue this. Because that proved conspiracy even with his lawyer. It proved conspiracy right then.
Yeah. And her question was, should she ask the sheriff to get date stamped copies for her? And I says, well, you can ask him, but that
no, no, no. The sheriff, no, 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 no. She's going in to have the sheriff serve. They're going to charge her $20. They know all the paperwork. They're going to give you all the proof and everything, the affidavits. They know exactly what they need to do, and they are going to mail all that paperwork. Once they serve, they're going to fill out an affidavit, have it signed, and they will mail it to whoever she says to mail it to. And she should have them mail it to Hyde Park, New York address for NLA, which you can give that to her. She should probably, she had that in the envelope anyway, that she was going to send to us. So she's got that address. This way I can get it directly without having to go down into Valhalla down in Westchester County and then up to me.
Okay, yeah, okay. Now we got that settled. Now let me talk a minute on committees of safety. The more each county, the more a county needs a committee of safety, the harder it is to get one formed. Now, David McQuestion had a major meeting over the weekend in Baker City. His main speaker was Chris Briles. Today, David, he was very frustrated on the turnout and the response, and he was ready to throw up his hands and quit, you know, and we sort of pumped him up again. But let me say this, and I cannot stress this enough. If your county is halfway healthy, if your sheriff is halfway responsive, it is important, important, important you get a committee of safety going while you've got a fighting chance. If you let that county decay to a certain point, it is going to take miracles to repair that county. And I'll tell you what, I honestly believe there's a lot of counties out there in Oregon that are beyond repair. It is going to take a major miracle to get those counties or where the people get control back. I can't stress that enough. If you got a halfway healthy county, get on it, get on it, get on it while you've got a fighting chance.
Yeah, look, let me just stick something in here with you, Ali. It only takes a couple of people to get it started. Don't worry if you only got two or three people. Get it started with two or three people. Okay, you can do your you know, again, we can do the resolution, and we could do the charter, okay? You could do that with one person, as a matter of fact, to get it done, okay? But you got to get five signatures on it. But once that charter and everything is done, then you get the other, you work to get five people. Once you get five people, then you get the four, other four people to agree, you know, bring it up for a vote, here it is. You know, we can play with it and add to it later, but let's get it initiated, let's get it certified. So you get the five people to agree. Now you got a charter, and now you got a resolution, okay? Now, those five people eventually will become 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and so on. The key thing is to go for at least one person in every town within your county. Every town and city in your county, get at least one person. And all those people should be looking for someone else. You'll get imbalances where some counties, you know, some towns you may have four or five people, other towns you may only have one. You know, but just start to get at least one from every town. Then you sit back. Now, once you get some a little bit of bulkiness to yourself, you got the five people that started, and maybe now you got 10 or 15 people. Okay, now that's the time to start working on your sheriff, okay? Priming your sheriff, getting the information to him, getting ready for a meeting with that sheriff. We're going to talk more about that on our Thursday night meetings, and we're going to add some more information on that in our handbook. We'll update the handbook this week. And that's the key. Once you have a dozen people in the county working with the sheriff, now you've got something going here, because once you get the sheriff on board with you and he's willing, And look at it, it's logic. You let them read your handbook. You let them read the resolution. You let them read your charter. You give them a copy of also the sheriff's duties, which is 36 or 38 pages. And when he reads all that literature, he's got to be a Nazi if he's not on board with you. He's going to understand and see it's logical. It's obvious in there, and it also lays out the law of the land. The top cop in the county is the sheriff, and he is responsible to make sure that constitution does not fail in that county. That's his job, and he's got to take it serious. Once you get him on board with that, and he's willing to sign that paper, now he sees he's got, you know, a committee behind him working with him, and you have him behind us. Now you go from town to town. Every town will sign on one after another. Look at You get a hold of the town, you tell them who you are, you make phone contact, maybe go down, have a 10-15 minute meeting with them or whatever, just say, okay, here's some literature. Give them a copy of your handbook. Give them a copy of all your paperwork, you know, your charter, your resolution, you know, the sheriff's power of the sheriff, the handbook, those four documents particular. Give them a copy. And in the handbook, by the way, is the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, we don't have the Magna Carta in there. We got a few things in there, though. But give them a copy of those books, okay? So when you go down to have the meeting with them, you're asking them to sign on to your resolution. You're asking them to bring it up at their next committee meeting, you know, within the town or whatever it is, to adopt these things also. You see? That's what we need to do. If you can get through your county and get your sheriff on board and get all of your towns on board, you don't need the masses. You don't need... if your county's got 1,500 people, 15,000 people in it, or whatever it is you got in it, you don't need all those people. You need a small group of committee people working and going to each town, getting them on board, and getting the sheriff. You got that. You got it done, because they're controlling. That's the local government. They're going to control the emergency then. And then the people will be then added in later. You know, they'll learn what's going on during the emergency, and they'll participate. And the plan will be executed. But believe me, by the time you get through these towns, you'll discover you'll have 100, 150, 200 people in your committee, and more, okay? And that's what we need to do. Go ahead, Alan.
That's right. Oh, yeah, we are out of time. We are running out of time. And let me tell you what, they've accelerated. Your counties are decaying at an exponential rate. You need to engage now, and that's all I got to say, but I yield. Thanks.
Thank you, Ollie. Appreciate it. Okay, let me see here who we're going to pull in next. Ann, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Hi.
How you doing, Ann?
I'm doing well. You know, I didn't get the telephone number of the court that the gentleman is, the 77-year-old gentleman in Montana. Can I get that information?
Yeah, we're going to get it in the email hopefully tomorrow. I don't have all that information yet. Ollie, you know what? Ollie, you need to get a hold of me tomorrow. I know you're in a different time zone, but as early as you get up, give me a call. Let's discuss a plan on what we need to do in calling Montana Courthouse and especially the clerk. And we're going to need calls going down to that courthouse over the next few days. We will get something out tomorrow, probably late morning or in the afternoon early. We'll get it out on email, and it'll be a broadcast to everyone. So please participate, and we will give all that information, basically a couple of ideas on what we need people to say. Okay?
Great.
Okay?
I will look forward to receiving the email. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, let me do this. I'm going to try to clean up the... clean up this area. Let's see, get rid of, see if this works. Hopefully I don't kick nobody out that shouldn't have been kicked out. Okay, I don't think I kicked out anybody that shouldn't have been kicked out, but if you've been kicked out of the queue, come on back in. Dave from California, you got the mic. Well, I just kicked out Dave. I guess Holly from Vermont. Dave, if you can come back in, there's nobody else there, just Holly right now. Anybody else that wants to get
okay,
into
I can wait.
No, because I'll get off queue again, and then because I was going through certain individuals, and now I'm just going to go in order. But go ahead,
okay.
Holly.
All right. So I spent a little time talking with Gerard this weekend. I was pretty up in arms because I was going into court pro se to select jurors or jury draw, as they call it. So I'm getting all anticipatory and trying to figure out how much is going to happen, and I go online to see what I can find out, and there's a huge list of people starting at 9 o'clock, and I'm not on the list. So I start calling around, and I found out that they had canceled my jury draw and put me on for a pre-conference hearing. This is all about some background for people just quickly. They demolished my farm, threw me in jail for about 36 hours to do this, entrapped me on the road on my way to meet my sheriff. Had an interesting conversation with the Vermont State Police Shastbury Barracks today about the fact that he doesn't have my bow and arrow, firearm, my one shotgun, and all the other scary things listed in affidavits with tape on them. So I countered their affidavit with my own affidavit. They know I'm coming in teeth bare and that I'm going to make interesting arguments and challenge them. And so I don't think they wanted to hear that in front of a whole bunch of people.
Well, let me give you some thoughts here. One of the first things you want to do in a court case and is really to set the stage on the law. What is the law of the case, okay? I used to have a paper that I would file in. It's too much for these people. I realized that the best way to do this is a memorandum of law, one item at a time, okay? And you have to choose your subject matters. Anybody who's following our paperwork and reading our papers, this week I'm going to try to organize our cases a lot better so it's easier to follow through. I've been thinking of a way I can do that. We have some interesting cases coming up. But what you're going to find in some of these cases, especially the newer ones now that we're working on, like the Montana case, we're taking a direct interest right into the courtroom in this case. We're also doing the same thing out in Oregon, and also we're going to do the same thing in Nevada with the Bundys. We're going to inject ourselves right into the case. I found a way that we can do this, and it's in their own rules of the court. Okay, we're going to use their rules of the court to get into the court, into those cases, and we're going to start injecting memorandums into the court. To define what the law is, to define common law, and that is the common law is the law of the land. Now, these memorandums that we're going to be creating, they can be used on any case you go into. And you can enhance them, of course. You can take the memorandum and you can add to it if you want, you know.
Wow.
But the thing is you can take the memorandums and use them, okay, and to use them to build around your case. You have to set the stage. So if you follow the cases we're doing, especially when we're going into the Montana case, we've got a couple of memorandums we're going to set in there to set the stages. And you'll see how we kind of put this one in first and this one in next and another one after that and another one after that, one piece at a time. And they're not going to be able to rebuttal it, so it's there. And now it's the law of the case, okay? And we're going to require the law of the case to be, you know, the law of the case. And if the if the judge does anything in opposition to those laws of the case, you know, those memorandums, which has not been rebutted, because they won't be able to rebut them, if he does anything that is in opposition to those memorandums, which is the law of the case, you can then give him a writ of error and overturn his decision and point to the memorandum that had been, entered into the court at a certain date on the docket. I'd give the docket number and everything. So maintain your dockets, okay? Maintain your dockets. You should get a copy of your docket at least once a month.
I have the whole thing. You know, my one question, sorry to interrupt you, but my train of thought will be lost. My one question on that is, I wonder, I've heard this example where they would disallow certain case law going back a certain time period, like they have, they want to erase history somehow.
Yeah, they'd like to do that, but again, listen very carefully how our plan is, how I work the courts, how I'm going to work the courts, and how you could do whatever you want. You have to establish the law of the case, and you do that through memorandum of law, at law. Okay,
John, can I ask you a quick question on that?
One subject matter at a time.
And right. One of my
each one of them, they won't rebut it, and now it becomes the law of the case.
Well, they have a really thin case on me to begin with. It's going to be extremely embarrassing for them in front of a jury. I already put in a request and got permission to videotape. One of the things that I took as a suggestion from one of the midweek calls was that, what if I say to them, please present more detail about the charges and the victim of my supposed crime, which is actually against the peace and dignity of the state of Vermont, ironically, as they crimed all over me, and so that I would know what I was pleading guilty to if I wanted to plead guilty before you move this into a jury trial or any other motion. You are very vague about your issues. And the other thing that's just a big wow for me is that there's some mind meld in the universe. I think I had kind of asked for boilerplate stuff. I had asked for boilerplate stuff about this that we could all take into court, and one of them being announcing the case law for jury nullification, understanding the idea that the jury itself can judge the law.
Before you get into anything like that, you have to very subtly come into the court and start taking control with memorandums of law. Okay? Watch what we're going to be doing in the Montana case and learn from that. We'll be doing other cases. We're going to be doing the cases out in Oregon. We're going to insert ourselves into those cases and start filing papers. Watch what it is that we insert first. And then we wait a little time, and then we go to the next one, and if anybody tries to rebut it, we're gonna clobber them and go right back down on top of them with law, and to rebut what they have to say, and to really break it down to what the law of the land is. When it comes to the battle of words, they can never win, okay. They win because they got a hold of the controls, and they silence you, they ignore you, and they do what they want because they can get away with it, and they're getting bolder and bolder and bolder. Okay.
Well, let me tell you a bold thing
they did.
That's
how they win. But my point is this here: when it comes to the words, understand this one thing. When you have this isn't, you know, it's a no-brainer in my mind, in my thinking, because I don't care what they do, what they think, what they say. I know I can beat that whatever words that they bring up, I can destroy them. I know I can. Why? Because I have truth and justice on my side. My whole position is always about truth and justice. And
right,
our
and all
founding
they do
fathers
is
bring in common law and bring in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, which is the beginning of the first document of creation, was that declaration. That's the law of the land. And we have government by the consent of the people right there. When it gets to the Constitution, we the people ordained and established. When it gets to the Bill of Rights, these are our unalienable rights. And we have a lot more than that, but these are the main primary ones. Don't tread on them. You see, when you bring those things in, they cannot fight them. And they can bring their fiction and try to apply the code and try to confuse people. But if you stay on point, make your points very clear, very small, one point at a time, with a memorandum of law on this, conclude the fact that this is a common law court. The other thing we do, you'll see how we'll do it, is we're going to change venue and we're going to change jurisdiction midstream in the court. Watch how we do that. It's all going to be in paperwork. It's all going to be in memorandums. And then we'll start applying the papers.
I have a real strong feeling that the prosecutor, who's also nervous about this and has a lot on his plate, you know, with real crime, is going to want to make a deal with me. But my fear is, and I talked to the clerk today, and I was very adamant about the fact that they decided this back on the 25th to cancel my jury selection and didn't tell me where I'm disabled and I have to get a ride. And I just thought, you know, you have my phone number, you have, if you did it at the last minute, somebody could notify me.
Yeah, they love
they
to
didn't.
Do that.
And
yeah, they
so
like
they're
to
playing
that.
This shadow game, and I want to call them on it before the 22nd, which they scheduled me for a pretrial hearing. And, you know, I've also threatened them with the Vermont Civil Liberties Union.
What's up with the jury, though?
Well, that's the point. I've got to call into the assistant state's attorney, who is, you know, the actual prosecutor here in these county court in Vermont. And I want him to tell me, you know, what's up? You know, why are they not notifying me of changes and that sort of thing? And the other very funny thing was I went back and forth between the sheriffs and the state police. And again, I was on the phone with the you know, the head of the barracks down here, and he doesn't have my illegally searched and seized, you know, weaponry. Almost every single sharp object I had, from froes to scythes to broad axes, antique cutting tool, all that stuff was like mysteriously missing from what they jammed into storage as the bank.
Well, who was responsible for? Who was responsible that led that? Was it a sheriff? Was it who led that?
Well, I was just emailing my sheriff tonight, and he's going to look into it.
But who? No. Well.
And
I
was told by the state
police
that it was the sheriff, and I was told by the sheriff it was the police, state police.
Okay. Well, I heard about your case.
You follow me?
While it was happening. Yeah, I heard about your case while it was happening, and look, if it was the state police that made point on this, go to the head. Okay. Whoever, the state police has someone that is appointed, a commissioner or somebody. They appointed.
Oh, I did. I've gotten him a RICO request.
That's
I've given
guy,
him a RICO
that's
request.
That's the guy you
got to
sue.
Now.
That's the guy you got to go after.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, eventually
I go to the director of the IRS, the guy whose name is on the top dog. That's the guy who I go after.
Yeah, and really it's between me and the bank, and also between the higher-ups who met, and I've got evidence that they had a fusion center meeting about me, the most dangerous, you know, overeducated redneck in southern Vermont, you know. And so they ended up with the sheriff and the state police, and that's their story, and they're sticking to it that nobody else was there. They also denied
well,
they were drones.
If you don't know the difference between the two, if the sheriff is the sheriff a good guy or a bad guy? Sounds like he's a bad guy.
He's in the middle, and I think he was very coerced.
Well, then you got to get him out. You got to go talk to your sheriff.
I've been working on him,
John. If you're
going
to stay in the middle, you need to be the top dog here. You're the guy responsible for what goes on in this county. Every violation of my unalienable rights, you are responsible for maintaining it. So if I got to go after this guy here who is the state police commissioner or whatever it is that's the top dog, and if you get some other names, fine, too. But you need to go to the head guy. That's the guy you got to go for. You got to put him into the vice. I'm going after that guy. And, Sheriff, if you don't start to step
up
and take control of the constitutional protection here in this county, I'm going to name you, too.
The officer's doing what they're told, and I'm not into I think they were coached, you know. They faked a –
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You know, but I put the whole crew on warning that if they did this, you know, kept terrorizing my family or ruined any of my goods, that they would be personally and professionally liable. So, you know, I want to make a federal case out of this in civil court. I want to get out of jeopardy of losing my Second Amendment rights and my, you know, getting some sort of felony, apparently criminal trespass, and for waking up where I do every day. You know, and
right,
it's
well,
just so ironic.
I don't want to go too much more.
Yeah, I can let it go, and I can.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't want to discuss cases. We will discuss the case that we're going to be involved in as we go forward. We're going to read the papers that we file, and look at. If you want to get an education on how to run a case, follow these cases. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited about getting that boilerplate. You know, the sort of models to follow. I think that's very.
Right. We will get these memorandums up there as we move along. We've got a couple written already, and we I got to go and perfect them. But we've got a couple of them written already, and we've got a few others, and they're all on point memorandums. It's setting the stage to bring our court to the proper place where it needs to be in order to get justice.
All right. Well, I withdraw.
And if nobody argues, look, this is what, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we're going to have any, they're going to call any conferences. I don't care about the garbage that they talk about. They call conferences in order to set their stage. I'll pull the plug on their stage. I object everything they're doing. I deny what they're doing. I will write an affidavit after I leave, and I'll overturn every decision the judge made. On paper, but I will continue to go forward with my memorandums, and that's how you're going to construct and prepare, the frame of your case. Once you've laid out the law of the case, that's what these memorandums are all about. You laid out the law of the case, and they have not rebutted any of them. It stands. Now they understand where you're coming from. There's other things you need to do, and I don't want to get into the details of them because it's just not wise at the moment. But if you study the paperwork, and you'll start to see little things in there that is being done concerning the fiction.
Well, I think that's why I've gotten them so concerned so far, because I've used the language, I think, very well in the case, in like my Supreme Court, appeals to the bank decisions in the civil side. And, you know, they see me coming. So, you know, they're going to try to shut
down. Yeah, but don't get lost in look, they've already got a strategy set up against the people coming in with the law of the land language, okay? Don't get lost in that. Stay with their language.
No, I didn't. I used NLA language.
You know what? I love their rules and I love their codes, okay? I really do. Because if you notice the case that we're doing in Montana, the few papers that we filed, and we'll get them posted shortly. Look at the codes I use. Look at the rules I use. It's their rules. They gave me the federal rule to be able to come into that court and make a case. They gave me the rule. It's right there in their rules. Okay? I made that plain and clear what we're doing. All right? What are they going to do? They're going to deny their own rules now?
Yeah. Well, that's mostly what I need help with, John, is the federal court filings, and because I think this civil matter is going to dwindle.
Well, of course, look at the whole thing. Your case, it's all about two things, jurisdiction and due process, and you ain't got either of them there, okay?
Yeah.
And once they violate your due process, that's cause. Go right up to the feds. Now, the feds isn't necessarily a best place to be because those guys play chess. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand their mindset and you have to understand their fiction, but you have to go in and deal with these people without talking about the man on the land crap. You got to get in there and use their language against them. You got to get in there and talk about the 41st Congress, okay? They know what you're talking about. Maybe nobody else knows what you're talking about when you put in there that whatever the 41st Congress is null and void, that done in this case is null and void, because it's referring back to the Organic Act. They know what that is, okay? Mm-hmm. And you can kind of signal across without putting it on the paper too clearly. It makes them a little more comfortable. They understand that you know what you're talking about, and you understand their game. They're leery of you, but they're seeing also that you're not attacking them, at least not yet. I mean, you're ready to do it if you have to do it, but they see that. The judge may push the prosecutor or whatever on the other side, and you always want to get in there and be the plaintiff, not the prosecutor. Look, we just did a case. We turned the whole case upside down on its head, okay? The whole case. And the guy's whining and crying and everything else, and it doesn't matter. We get moving on, put in the next paper, okay? The next paper, all right? And we make it clearer and clearer, okay? And I know that they're shaking in their boots. We know
that's why the clerks are resisting it. And I found some great language in Vermont code about the duty of the clerk, and it very clearly states that it's not for them to decide. You know, it can be erroneous. Let the two sides fight it out.
But
it's
remember this, they can't call us crazies. We're using their language. We're using their rules. We're using their codes. And we're using the United States Supreme Court. We're using founding documents. We're not playing the land on the... Please, everybody, I keep getting mail from people from time to time, and they're telling me that I need to do this. They don't understand the strategy here that we're talking about. They can't make you look like a nut. And they don't have a strategy to go out against you. And you see, the whole thing is not only getting the law in into the court, you know, the law that's going to control that court. The other thing that you're doing is you keep signaling these little things, and you'll read the papers, you'll see it's a signal to the judge that I'll go after you and I'll go for your throat if you continue here or you go there or you violate me there. Okay, you don't want to say it to him, you don't want to threaten him, or anything of that nature. But it's very subtle in the paperwork. If you read very carefully through it, he sees what you're doing and he understands. You see, if they realize you understand what they're doing, it riles them when they respond and you're able to respond right back and bring them right back down underfoot. And if you can do that, then they worry about you because they really don't know who you really are and they really don't know what you really know. And
yeah,
now
they legislate from the bench, and you put them on notice that you know they need to be on good behavior and referee. All they're supposed to do is referee.
Now you got to understand, there's another problem in the court, and this is the problem I think we're having in Montana. They have overstepped the line so far; they have put themselves their neck out so far; they have violated the law in front of so many people that there is no way for them to get out from underneath it. And they are like a trapped rat in a corner. And now they're willing to do almost anything. And that's a very dangerous situation that you got to be very careful in handling it. But the point is they do get to a point, where they just, it doesn't matter. They'll do almost anything. I remember listening to the Schiff case, and I had recordings from that case. And that judge was going off the walls from time to time because Schiff would constantly come in and bring something under kind of, I told you, don't bring that up in the court. I'm going to get you for contempt. You stop it right now. He'd try to cut him off before he even got to it. So some people who really don't understand what was going on may not realize what Schiff was trying to say and what the judge was saying you can't say. Okay? And this was a problem for Schiff, though, because he had the upper hand, and Schiff, who was an intelligent guy, brilliant guy, he understood the whole game, but he missed a few major points, okay? He missed jurisdiction. He missed due process. Those are the two things he missed. But everything else, he had it right, and it was hard for him to make the argument. And he didn't understand that he couldn't talk about the Constitution in the court. He didn't understand the court he was in. He didn't understand how to get out of that court. He didn't understand how to put the judge into jeopardy himself. But you got to do it in the beginning of the case, because once trial's going, it's too late. You're not going to be able to do anything once the fix is in, the jurisdiction is set, the stages are set, they've had all their stupid meetings. You see, you have to upset every meeting they have is to set the stage for them to trap you. And they're going to trap you, and what they're going to do is you're going to be guilty. There's no getting out of their trap. The jury's going to go along with what the court wants. Everybody, because they set the stage, they set up everything is set up to prevent your evidence from getting in, distort your evidence, make you look like a nut, find you in contempt if you go here or you go there. You see, and all that is progressive, okay? In the beginning, it's not there. It's progressively moved there. You got to destroy every meeting they have. You got to overrule. You got to deny. You got to bring the law of the case into the case, and you got to build your strategies. And you got to bring them to the point where they're on the defensive. Okay, you're on the offensive. Every case I see with people in, the people are on the defense and they're on the offense. And I used to be in that position. I used to get very frustrated because I couldn't figure out how to get out of it. But you got to take control from day one, and you got to go and you got to shut them down every time they bring up a what do you call it their meetings. What do they call it? Their hearings.
The conferences.
Because all of that, yeah, the conferences. It's all on.
Okay, that's what I have next, and I want
to work.
I want to work with you guys on what to bring there to, you know, shake down the guy. But you should take somebody else's call and keep going. So. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Hey, Gerard, you want to pick up? I'll kind of co-host with you.
Yeah, hang on. Let me get back to the screen.
You're low. Get closer to your mic before you do.
Okay. Looks like Washington Rhonda is next. You've been unmuted.
Hi.
Hey.
My question is, back to the double jeopardy for the Fifth Amendment. I understand that about the Fifth Amendment, but how do they, once you've been acquitted or you have a hung jury and they can't put you twice in jeopardy, how then do they make a civil case out of it that you have to be tried in?
Well, look, that's like what they did with O.J. They went after him civilly. And the reason they can go after you civilly for money in a wrongdoing is because they don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. In other words, in a civil case, you could use circumstantial and a preponderance of evidence, and the jury can find for the plaintiff and award. It's not, the standards are not as high as taking, you know, a capital crime. So that's
how I understand that part of it. I understand the difference between what they can go after you for in a civil case that they can't again try you in a criminal case. But does that not come back to maybe not your life and liberty, but obviously your pursuit of happiness, because you've worked for that income, that money, that they are now going to try you to take it away from you?
Yeah, you have a good point, because you defended yourself in the higher court for the higher charge, and then they come back and they're coming after you, and you've already kind of like answered that, or it didn't get answered. There wasn't enough evidence for the higher charge. So then, you know, how can they go in and grab money out of you anyway? I don't know what the answer is to that. I know also, you know, that when it comes to grand juries, a lot of the prosecutors, if they don't get an indictment, they keep going out and getting grand juries until they get an indictment. Now, that's a problem.
Right.
That's almost the same thing.
It's also, that proves vindictive prosecution, by the way. And you should take that record and make that point. You know, one of the things they do to validate their hung jury as being having the right to go forward and retrial the case, you see, the judges have this rule. Okay, first of all, they build their case or their idea concerning the hung jury on the United States versus Perez, okay? And in that particular case is when they turned everything upside down. But the conclusion or the argument in that particular case, which was back, I think, in 1828 or so, I mean, 1828, I think it was. And the conclusion in that case, matter of fact, Justice Story sat on that case, and the United States Supreme Court made a ruling on it. But the ruling they made was not concerning the hung jury per se. It was really focusing in on something else. And if I recall, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm still working on studying this, so I may be in error on this one, but if I recall, I think the argument that was really being discussed was the right of the judge to be able to call for a hung jury. That was the real argument. Not that the hung jury, once coming through being a hung jury, they can now go out and get another jury. No, that case did not conclude that point. That case has never been concluded in the United States. And as a matter of fact, all other cases concerning that kind of thing goes the opposite direction. And so you have to understand that argument. And there is a paper. I'm going to post this paper. It's called Retrial After a Hung Jury, The Double Jeopardy Problem by Janet E. Findlater. And once I finish my study on this, I'm going to post this up there also with my conclusion and my memorandum on how I would go about challenging this problem. And I would set the stage in every case that I would go in. I would bring in this point and this position. hung jury. Once in jeopardy, you can't put me in double jeopardy. There are some courts that have tried to conclude that you're not in jeopardy until the trial jury makes the final decision. Until then, you're not in jeopardy. But the Supreme Court has ruled numerous times over, no. You're in jeopardy the moment that the jury comes into play, because now your life and limb is in jeopardy. It's being threatened. It could be lost. Once the decision is made, you're no longer in jeopardy. Either you lost your limbs or you defeated it. No, you go into jeopardy at the point when that jury is brought together. They cannot bring another case up against you. And here's the key, and this is the way it is under common law. That jury doesn't leave that room until they finish their case. You know, they'll put them to sleep and they'll feed them and they'll come back the next day and discuss it for another 8 or 10 hours or whatever the case may be. And it'll come back the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. They're not leaving. It's like choosing a pope. You're not leaving until we find out what's going to happen here. Now, the conclusion is this, and this is a common law conclusion, okay? And the Supreme Court, I believe, has already backed this up too. And again, I'm working on this paper, so you know, I'm a little rusty on exactly. I'm still not clear on all this yet. But here's one of the key points here, okay, is that the judge does not have the power or the authority to release that jury. Now, they've come to a conclusion that judges will push a jury back once and at most twice. So if the jury comes back and says, look, we're stuck. We can't. No, you guys go back in there. You make a decision. You get back in there, okay? Once they come back again, they might send them back a second time. They will never do it a third time, okay? And then what the judge does, he calls for a hung jury. The trial is called a mistrial. And then they decide whether they're going to try again, and they usually do because they're vindictive and they want their prosecution, okay? And that is their game. I believe, I'm not sure, I think the Perez case was about that, but don't hold me to that yet because I'm still studying it. And again, when I conclude my studies, I'm going to be able to talk on this and articulate it much better, and I'll have the paper up there, and I'll also have this paper up there where people can read through this also. There's some very powerful positions made there, and it is, look at, logic is the answer. You don't need anything, you don't need any court case, you don't need any of this stuff I'm talking about if you just go back to the Constitution and ask yourself the question. You don't even need someone else's conclusion. Look at, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy. Okay. When I started studying that, I started my study on myself before I started reading other people's work. I want to know what I think. Mm-hmm. And the first question I asked myself is, what does it mean to be in jeopardy? And you look up the word jeopardy and the meaning of the word jeopardy. You're in danger, man. You're in danger. It goes on, twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. You're in danger of losing your life or losing your limb. When is that the case for anyone? Look, if once the conclusion of the jury is done, then they've made the decision. You're not in jeopardy no more. They've made the decision. You're going to lose your life or you're going to lose your limb or they let you go. There is no more. You're not in jeopardy no more. But until when that jury is brought together, until they have their verdict, you're in jeopardy of losing life and limb. That was my logical deduction before even going into this case. And as I'm going in and studying this, that's the same conclusion the Supreme Court has taken. And there's the later, you know, some of these cases and these conclusions on the Supreme Court was as late, there's one in here in 1978, so it's not going all the way back. Even though the Perez case was back in 1824, in 1978 it was talking about the Perez case and it didn't discuss the issues that they're claiming. So these people that come into court, they've done it so many times, they put the Perez case up over and over and over, and they don't even argue the point. They figure it's done, it's a done deal, a conclusion, and that's the way it is. Because that's what they want. You got to blow that whole thing out of the water. And you got to do it in the beginning, and the way to do it really is to bring the Perez, don't let them bring the Perez case up, you bring the Perez case up.
Yeah.
You show them how it's not valid, and it didn't have the teeth on what they're saying. And you bring all these other cases that say that the Perez case didn't say this, and you bring these other cases that make it clear. And you bring logic up this conclusion. What is jeopardy? Who is in jeopardy? When are you in jeopardy? It's so simple. Twice in jeopardy. You can't be brought into that, under that situation twice. You can't be put in jeopardy twice.
And I would think that with common law, it wouldn't, you wouldn't have a criminal case that you were acquitted and or hung jury, and then you would be able to do a civil case. I would think that
under common law, if you go back into the past, into history, what I'm discovering is you look at common law, it can be much more harsh, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're the criminal and you're guilty, you better make a deal and try to get out of it quick, because common law is going to take your head off, okay? So it's really big on restitution,
right,
and penalty. But look at in common law, it's gone as far as where the judge will say, actually won't even let the people eat. Don't give the jury food; they're not eating no more. We're done. They're going to come to a conclusion. Now, that's wrong. Don't get me wrong. That's not the right thing to do.
But it definitely that has make happened. Them get off of their butt.
Right. That has happened, okay? The thing is, if they're in there for 30 hours or 30 days or 30 weeks, you're going to wait. You're just going to wait.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Gerard, did you go to sleep?
Yeah. Okay, we got California Dave coming up.
By the way, I'm gonna drop this into your Skype. You should read this tomorrow. This case, this review, this law review. It's pretty powerful. I'm learning a lot from this one. It's called Retrial After a Hung Jury: The Double Jeopardy Problem by Janet E. Finder. Fine later. I will have this posted hopefully this week, because we're working on the double jeopardy case, because in Montana, that Montana case is a double jeopardy case, by the way. He already had been tried, and they got a hung jury. They brought him back in a second time. And that's what made me really dig deep into this, and I quizzed a little bit with Brent to see what his thinking was. And that's what made me start to research, and I found this paper on this, on the double jeopardy problem. And we're going to have a paper done this week, I think, and I'm going to post that paper with this paper. And anybody that's going into court, you got to know these things. Look at memorandums. That's the key to the case. That's my opinion, anyway. Gerard, go ahead. Put you to sleep again?
I muted myself. I said, Dave, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, guys. All right, so I've been learning that an effective court case, which, like John talked about, that utilizes code, procedures, case law, incorporates elements of common law, constitution, and even some of that natural man on the land stuff, but it incorporates it, like John said, discreetly and effectively. And a mentor of mine told me a metaphor about a kid's birthday cake, all right? You think of a kid's birthday cake as the effective use of codes and case law and procedure, because the birthday cake incorporates sugar, flour, eggs, milk into the cake. But you can't bring the eggs and the flour and the sugar separately and just drop them on the kid's birthday table, because he's going to look at you like you're crazy. They've got to be incorporated into the cake. They've got to be cooked into the cake. You just can't bring a bag of sugar and go, here's your cake, kids, have fun. They're going to go, where's my cake? And you say, well, these are the essential ingredients of your cake. This is your cake. They're going to start crying to mommy, and mommy's going to kick you out and call security, because a crazy man trying to bring a cake that's a bag of sugar, a dozen eggs, a sack of flour, and a gallon of milk. So that's what I learned about incorporating the founding concept into the courtroom. You got to bake it into the court's process. That way you serve them cake, they recognize it, they like it, they can eat it, they can digest it, it doesn't make them sick, and it doesn't make you look crazy.
So we shouldn't go in half baked then, huh?
Yeah, you can't bring in the raw ingredients and just throw them on the table.
Right.
The a bag of sugar does not apply at a kid's birthday party, even though it's in the cake. You just can't bring a bag of sugar.
Well, the kids may love that part.
Well, yeah.
Especially it depends on their age. They may like sticks of butter too.
But they probably won't like a dozen raw eggs.
No, that they won't like.
Yeah. So it's the same thing. The Constitution doesn't apply here because you're trying to bring me a dozen raw eggs, and I can't handle a dozen raw eggs. That would be...
Right. But one of the key, you got to build your case, and that's the point I'm trying to make. And you know, I'm becoming to realize this more and more, and I'm beginning to understand how to do this more and more. You know, I'm still learning just like everyone else is learning. And you're constantly perfecting your thinking and your conclusions and what your strategy is and stuff. And it's really very simple, though. It's really very simple. You're always looking for a couple of things. You're looking to see, make sure jurisdiction is in play, the right jurisdiction. And it never is. So you've got to set the stage for the jurisdiction. And you got to know when to move the case into the federal court. Remember, every court out – let's take New York courts, okay? All courts in New York courts are supposed to be courts of record. So I'm going to, even the town and the village courts are supposed to be courts of record, okay? So I'm going to bring the court of record into the game. I'm going to turn the whole table upside down. I'm going to remove the defendant, and I'm going to change the venue. I'm going to change the jurisdiction, because I already know what jurisdiction they brought me into. It's a foreign jurisdiction. It's nothing to do with me. And I'm in the wrong venue. So I'm going to change the venue, and I'm going to change the jurisdiction. I'm going to turn it upside down, and I'm going to call the defendant the plaintiff and the plaintiff defendant. And I'm going to call the people, the people against or the state against or whatever words they use. They usually it's the state or the town, the state versus this or the town of whatever versus this, whatever their case. I'm going to take that and call that a creature because that's what it is. It's a fiction. It's a creature. And there is a Greek word, it's not Greek, no, it's probably Latin. It's a Latin word for that, okay? And I use that Latin word, and basically it refers to the creature. And it's used to hide fraud, and I put that into the case. So I changed the whole heading all around. And so they get frustrated. The lawyers get all, upset about this, and they complain and cry to the judge like little babies. They have no clue in what we're doing. And little by little, we start to feed them the solutions to these things. And you got to build your case and to frame your case, to frame the law into the case because it's not there. They've got something else all framed up for you to come into so that they can take control over you and destroy you. Okay? You have to change everything. I remember I used to say all the time, I'm so sick to have to go into the court and never get the chance to argue my case against the other side because I'm always fighting the judge. Every move I make, every turn I take, there's this judge in my way over and over and over again. Well, I'm not going to bother fighting him no more. He has nothing to do in this case. I'm going to set the stage, put up a memorandum at law, little by little get these guys on the run. They may do nothing because they can't do nothing. They can't respond. And then when they turn around to go up against it, I'm going to bring the law of the land up. And when the judge tries to rule on the other side, I'm going to overrule his ruling and go back to the law of the land that we laid up in there. And I'm going to, let it be known that, look, they didn't rebut it to begin with. It's sitting here. Nobody rebutted it. That's the law. If it's not the law, rebut it. Okay? But this is not the judge's case. He doesn't belong sticking his fingers in here. It's me against them. Okay? And that's where you got to get the case to, and it takes a while to be able to develop that. That's the new strategy that I'm looking at to try to build that way. And you do it with memorandums, in my opinion.
And even with all of that, you're still using their own rules against them.
Oh, yeah, I love their rules. Their rules are good. Don't think their rules are bad. I will use their rules over and over and over again because the rules are good. You know, they look at the rules initiated in the very beginning. Okay, now some of their rules are bad and null and void, and we can make them so. Okay, but basically their rules that accord are fine, generally speaking, most cases. And even their codes, I like their codes. I like US 18 codes and the 42 codes. I forget the other numbers, 248, 247, whatever it was. But I like them codes. I like what they say. You know, I like the codes that tell me that the clerk must file. I like the code that says that anyone that conceals or removes or destroys, 20 years in jail. I like that code. I'll use that code. Why not? It's a good code. It's a constitutional code. That's what we expect our government to create, codes like that. But when they come in with conclusions that are not constitutional, or they come in with a code that is trying to control me, you know, as a person, as an individual, they're kind of trying to control my behavior, well, I got a whole bunch of stuff I can use to show that that's not constitutional. It violates my unalienable rights. It's null and void, and we're not going to use that in this courtroom. And that's the argument you got to make. You do and again, you can cut to the chase by developing the rules, by using their rules and developing the law of the case by framing it slowly but surely in the courtroom as they're busy having their stupid meetings. You know, they come in for conferences, all unconstitutional, has nothing to do with the court of law. But they can have them. That's where they're wasting their time at. We don't have to worry. Frame out the court. Move the court to frame it out. They're not even going to do nothing about it because they don't know what to do. And then when you go to their meetings, I say this over and over again, object to everything, overrule anything he's done, give him writ of error, and move on. Keep framing your case. Don't try to overrule him in the courtroom. He'll get you for contempt.
In other words, you're bringing your own ingredients, but you're using his rules as the recipe to make the cake.
Right, I'm baking my own cake, yeah.
but his rules are the recipe. He cannot...
I like a lot of his stuff, yeah. It makes the cake taste sweet, absolutely.
Okay, my second topic is regarding committees of safety.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so in most counties, as you know, and you may have already covered this in the prior calls, but as you know, most counties already have an emergency operations plan in place, and these emergency operation plans are usually overseen by the wrong guy. They're overseen by some bureaucrat or a county supervisor and not the sheriff. But what they do have going for them is they have huge infrastructure already set up. Stuff, buildings, supplies, equipment, vehicles, websites, the whole nine yards. The only thing they seem to be missing is the right guy is not in charge. So what I'm thinking is we take our 2 or 5 or 10 or 20-man committee of safety, we go affiliate with the emergency operations plan, make friends with them, help them, and then use our influence and our newly established rapport to go up and change the guy in charge to the proper entity, which should be the sheriff. What do you think?
Let's look at a sheriff is supposed to be like a construction manager. Okay, he needs to know when to back up and let the individuals that have high experience work, and when to intervene to get into it. I drove ambulance in New York City many years ago. And when you pull up onto an accident scene or a situation, and it's a medical situation, you run the show on that. The cops do exactly what you tell them to do. That's what they do. Okay, they step aside, they move out, you give them orders, and you move this individual to a point where you can, you know, stabilize them and transport them and deliver them into the hospital. And no cop's going to get in that way. Now, you got a fire department comes onto the scene, they rule. In a fire, the cops rule over the fire department rule over the cops. Down in New York City, there's a very strong relationship between the fire department and the cops. And they know who has jurisdiction under what situations. And the sheriff If he comes onto the scene, it is true, he could take control of any scene, but it would be insane for him to put, if he doesn't have the expertise of the individuals that are there that he knows has the expertise, he's got to step aside and only take control of what is necessary. So you have all these emergency services set up in towns and, you know, emergency rescue, the fire department, you got the ambulances and you got the police departments and all these different things. Okay, they all know what their job is. And when they go onto the scene, they understand what kind of a jurisdiction, so to speak, it is, you know, who's in charge because of what's going on. Okay, and everybody steps aside and you share that kind of thing. All right. But the key thing is the total orchestrator that could step in at any time and stop the whole game and change gears and move it a different direction is only one person, and that's the sheriff. Now, he better not step into something that he doesn't have an expertise in when these guys are saving a life or doing something. I'm sure he has the common sense to realize, you know. They kind of run the game, run the gambit. You know, a sheriff's not going to tell a doctor, you know, not to cut someone's trach to give him some airflow or something like that, you know, because the doctor's in charge. He knows what's going on. It's obvious. So all of this stuff really in the towns, it's all worked out. The problem is who takes control of the town? Who takes control of the police force? Who takes control of the key players? And that's where the feds come in. They want to take control of the key players and therefore control the town and all the people by controlling that and then, of course, fortifying that with armed forces in a national emergency. The point that we make in the book is that these guys got this all figured out. We don't need to get in the way of emergency services. They know what they're doing when they come onto the scene. They know who's in charge and who should take the lead. They all know. Because, look, I take charge of anything that I feel that I'm confident and that I'm able to take charge of, and nobody else there has more experience than me, and I see that, then I will take charge of a situation. And I do that. I've been doing that in business for years. And you do that in whatever it is you do, you know, if you're in a management level. And other people will realize and step aside. You know, very rarely you get someone to come and give you an argument. You know, but again, the key thing is the chain of command, the protocol. That's the key. The sheriff must set forth his protocol, and everybody understands that they all answer to him. That's the key to the whole thing. The sheriff should not be sticking his nose into everything, and he should know when he needs to and when he doesn't.
And the key to getting this done quicker is realizing, as we already have discussed, that there's a pre-existing infrastructure already there. We just have to make sure that the sheriff's in charge.
The chain of command is the key. Read the book. You probably already read the book, but just go back to those parts. The chain of command is the key. The logic of the inability of a federal government to control 300 million people in 19,000 cities and states is insane to think that they can control all that. They can't. Okay, and by doing, the only way they can is at the end of a barrel of a gun. And the state doesn't have the manpower and the ability to do it either. They got to do a hands-off. They got to understand what's going on at the scene and back off and hands-off, because those are the guys that knows what's going on. I don't really. They can have the compassion in the sense of a national emergency on the ground level, on the boots on the ground level. Compassion can be applied and will be applied because it's a person thing. We're social animals. It's going to be that way, naturally, for most people, except for those who are insane. But on the other end, there is no compassion. There is no people. There is no person. There is no social relationships. It's just control.
And the good news is every county seems to have most of this already set up. We just need to go in there and make sure the sheriff is ultimately overseeing it.
Chain of command. That's all it is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Chain of command. So 99.9% of the work is already done. We just have to get the sheriff in charge of it.
And everybody, here's the thing, okay? If you don't plan for a situation, you know, emergency services plan for things, okay? They learn strategies of different things on what to do. They have practices. They have training. You know, they plan for this or they plan for that. When they come onto a scene where they have no experience on it, that's when things fall apart. And that's when things, people lose time, and time is of the essence in an emergency. Lives are hanging in the balance, okay? So now you're stopping and saying, what are we going to do here? And, you know, next thing you know, you got somebody takes control who shouldn't have control, and the whole thing is nothing but chaos, okay? And that's what we want to prevent. We want these people to think. We want the towns and the cities, the villages. We want the police departments. We want the sheriff. We want all of them thinking about this major catastrophe, a national disaster. We want them to think about it now and exercise the idea in the mind. We've given them the thoughts. We've laid out the logic right in the book. You showed the logic, you know, on the situation. They can't possibly handle that. And everything is in place. And there's a constitutional answer to this whole thing. It's right there, boots on the ground. It is the county sheriff who is the top dog on the chain of command. And once they get their heads wrapped around that, and they understand that, and they see the dangers and the lack of compassion, all the other things, if we'd allow the federal government to take control, and also the loss of liberty, the loss of the Constitution, the control by the military, and no longer do we have the three branches, because they're gone and once they put in martial law. And martial, once they understand that the purpose of martial law, it's never been applied on anything other than a captured society, a society that was taken over by another entity. The United States wins, you know, takes over a nation, Germany or whatever. We bring them under the martial law. They're a captured people. That's what martial law is all about. They need to understand that. And they need to understand that they take control of everything. We have no control of anything. You see, once they realize that, because they haven't thought about that, and they don't have time to think about it when the emergency hits. They're just going to follow orders, and before they know it, they're locked into, you know, the iron fist, and they can't get out. Well, look, if we don't allow that iron fist to close, we don't have to worry about getting out. They need to be worried about getting out. And so that's what we need to do. We need to get them thinking about this before the emergency comes. We need to let them understand by knowledge and of history and our common law and our Constitution, it'll all tell us what to do. And that's all we're doing. We don't have to change any of the mechanisms of what's going on down on the lower end, because that's all fine. They got that figured out. Firemen know what to do. Cops know what to do. Rescue knows what to do. Whether it's water rescue, air rescue, or whatever kind of rescue, they all know what to do. The ambulance, they know what to do. Paramedics, doc, they all know what to do. Okay, but it's who takes control of all that. Sheriff needs to be the top dog on that.
Okay, thank you, John.
Right.
Okay, South Carolina. Ann, you're unmuted.
Hi, Gerald and John. This is Wanda Ann. And two questions. One's a point of order. When you were reading the article, the paper for our guys out in Oregon, you stated U.S. citizen. What I'm finding, and Bednarik said it in the civics course, that if you declare yourself as a U.S. citizen, you are under the auspice of the Congress, and you have no freedom, and your actual point of reference is D.C. So what I'm wondering, if that terminology shouldn't be taken out, and never declare yourself as a U.S. citizen. The second point I have, and leaving that open for discussion later, but the other point I have is what you were just talking about. I listened to a video, and it was about a plane that disappeared. I don't know if they were going to Greece or what, but it totally disappeared. And the premise they were talking about was the fact of how do you do the next step when it's not in the order of your training. The plane in question, I had a break in the line or something like that, and it was freezing. If they had been in a preparation type of mode and taken the plane down, it would have melted and people would have been saved. They probably wouldn't even know that something happened. So they gave a follow-up preparation, and this is what it's about. This pilot on the way to the airport had his whole flight crew going through, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? What if that happens? And they had to give the response, bam, bam, bam. Well, that plane got into trouble. And what he did, because they were thinking always outside the box, that plane, when it got into trouble, he rationalized, we're on one engine. I learned to fly a Cessna. That's a single prop. I can do this. This is now a single prop plane. And my battery's going low. But I'm bringing it up for us to look at things differently. How can we be prepared for anything that comes along, any way that it comes along, by always thinking, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens?
Right.
What if that happens?
I can answer some of that. Gerard, do you want to take the citizen thing, or do you want me to do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Look, if you go into the Constitution, okay, it is the federal government that brings citizenship. In other words, if someone comes into the government, they're the ones that is supposed to, you know, bring them in to become citizens. If people want to become citizens, come into this country. Okay? Once a person becomes a citizen, ultimately it's generic for all states. There are 50 states. They can live in any one of those 50 states, and they are part of the country or whatever state they want to move in. The country of New York, the country of Jersey, Texas, California. You know, we have 50 sovereign countries here. And we can call them states. And all of these have become united into the United States of America, which is 50 states. But we do have a federal government, and we do have one process of bringing people into this country to become citizens. And Congress has been given that job. It's in Article 1, okay? Now, our founding the word citizen is used a few times here in the Constitution. Our founding fathers used the word citizen. I'm not too happy with it either because of the distortment that people have given it. But look, a citizen doesn't make you a slave of the state. It just doesn't. They say it does because they have come up with certain things. For instance, the Organic Act of 1871 is the key to the whole thing, in my opinion. Okay, this is where they've turned the citizen into someone that is under the state, whereas the people are not under the state. We owe nothing to the state. It gives us nothing, and we owe nothing to it. Okay, we are the authority. We're the masters. They are the servants. Mm-hmm. But they've turned it around to call themselves the masters and to call us the servants and to call us citizens and to play that game. But you know what? When you go into these things and you talk about these things, it's all about fiction. The moment you walk into a court and you deny being a citizen, you have now given them credibility. You've given them the reality. They're a fiction. Treat them like a fiction. It's irrelevant. It means nothing. You want to talk about the fraud that was done by the 41st Congress in 1871? Is that what you want to talk about? And, of course, they don't want to talk about it. So I say, don't play the game with the man on the land. That's all baloney. Don't try to go in telling him that you're a sovereign citizen. We do make
no,
the point on or sovereign people, whatever. Look, we do make a point on being sovereign. Okay, we are going to make a memorandum on that. That's an important point. On we have to put it as in its proper perspective, and it's the people who are sovereign. Okay, the states are vested with certain powers, okay? They are vested with powers. They are not sovereign, okay? Now, we do have sovereign states in the sense that we're sovereign from the federal government, okay? But it's a narrow sovereignty. It's not being sovereign.
They call it a clipped sovereignty.
Right, I've heard that phrase used too, so we'll call it a clip sovereignty. But the point is this, okay? I am a United States citizen, okay? I am. They want to turn the word around and make it a slave? Let's see them do it in a court. They're not going to do it in the court. You know how you control that court? You bring the law into the court. You bring the law of the land into the court. You do that by framing your case with memorandums. That's how you bring the law into your court. And you box them in. And they're not going to come and say, aha, you see, you got a Social Security number. Hey, you signed the, you're voting, and you signed the voting papers. And look, at you made yourself a citizen there, and you got a driver's license. You submitted. You see, you know, we got a contract with you, and you're our slave, and we're going to tell you what. Look, they're not going to say that. They're not going to make that argument. Ignore it. It's irrelevant. Call the fraud a fraud. Let them know that the 41st Congress was irrelevant. They were subversive. And don't rest in that. Anybody rest in that 41st Congress with the Organic Act of 1871, you know, you're going to have a hard time later on, because you're going to find yourself as subverters against the people, and we're going to get you for it. You see, don't give the fiction reality by trying to work your language around them. They're robbing our words and making them mean something else. Now, I was careful with the word resident versus the word, what was the one I used?
Domicile.
Right? I used that one there because that's kind of a tricky one. But I purposely left the citizen there. And people shouldn't be afraid to use that word, citizen.
When you open up a court of record and you lay out your jurisdiction, so to speak, you're rebutting all that presumption, because you're coming into it. You're stating under the Constitution, Republican form of government, and if they don't rebut that, then they're done. All that presumption that you're a U.S. citizen and you have these adhesion contracts is blown out of the water when you accept their oaths and bonds under the Constitution.
Right. Let me build on what Gerard just said, because it's a perfect example. Look, we come into the courts. We're one of the people of New York State, or whatever state you want to be in. I'm one of the people. I refer to that. That's what you want to refer yourself to. And in this court of record, this is what's going on. I'm suing this, that, or the other thing. Okay? And you go through the process. If you are the defendant in a criminal action or some kind of a stupid action that they make up, or traffic, and they make it criminal, or whatever the case may be, you turn the whole thing upside down by changing the venue and changing the jurisdiction, calling the fiction for what it is. You use the Latin word. Okay, there's a Latin word concerning what this is, what that corporation is, and it refers to as the creature, and its purpose. The purpose of that corporation is to hide fraud. That's the whole purpose. Mm-hmm. Look, they veiled over everything that is a trust of the people, part of the government, the servants of the people. They veiled a corporation over it. They called it by the same name. They used the same language. They used the same people who are elected to control it. But they've taken control of that, and they put a veil. And that veil is for the purpose of hiding fraud. That's what you have to understand. And we put that right in the paper, that the purpose of this creature that is called the state of New York against, or the village of something or other against, or whatever it is, the purpose of that is to conceal fraud. We remove them totally. They're not the defendant, and they're not the plaintiff. We remove them and call them for what it is. We then take the other side, okay, and we call them the defendants, and we call ourselves the plaintiffs. And then we explain, as we go on, how we did that topsy-turvy. And it takes a little time, but again, it's all be laid out. You're changing the whole venue. You're changing the whole jurisdiction. And before they realize what you're doing, you're there. And before they realize what you're doing, they didn't argue anything. Okay, they scratched their head. They laughed in the bar, saying, "Oh, what a bunch of jerks! Look what they're doing. Are they insane? You know, look it." But we didn't do anything. But we used their rules. We used their laws. We used their court system, which is our court system, and our rules and our law anyway. Okay, and we reject that which is repugnant to the Constitution. And we make a clear case on that. And before you know it, they will be in a trap. Now, the question is where do they go from there? You know, there's nothing worse than ignorance and action. So they're ignorant and they're in action. So if they're that dumb, they're going to continue to go down a road. But then at that point now, we've set the whole stage to move for cause right into the federal courts. And that's where the chess players are. That's where they're understanding what you're doing.
Well, my question is then, is this a countersuit that you're doing, or you're just changing the words around that they're not catching, like they would change what they did in many cases? They would change the case number or something?
It's not a countersuit, okay? It's taking control of the court and suing them for violating your unalienable rights and trying to hijack you into jurisdictions unknown. That's what it's all about from my perspective, and that's what my case is all about whenever I argue with these people in anything. I don't care what they bring up against me. It's always the same argument. It's always the same thing. It's always about jurisdiction. It's always about due process.
Correct.
They're not giving me my proper jurisdiction, and they're not giving me my due process, and they took an oath, and I don't care about the 41st Congress, and I let them know that. All of that is already – I've already framed my case. Now I'm moving it over to the feds who look at that case, and
sometimes
I don't know that many people frame it that way.
Sometimes you do call yourself the counter plaintiff. We've done that before,
but I won't do it no more. Yeah.
Yeah,
because we're still in their jurisdiction then. We're in their game.
Okay, because that's what I was asking, kind of wanting to find out. Are you changing it, which would keep you in their jurisdiction too?
If we call ourselves the counter plaintiff or something like that, then we're I didn't know this. We use that strategy. Look, we made a lot of mistakes, just like everyone else. We came out of the fiction. Look, we did the man on the land. We did the declarations and all that stuff. And as we looked deeper into it, we saw what they were doing, what the other side was doing, and we started to get more educated and look deeper into the common law and different things going on. We realized we're just getting lost in their bullshit. We need to step on our own feet and call it for what it is. A fraud is a fraud. And so, you know, sometimes you go in and you make the court case and you do a counter thing of this. You call yourself the counter plaintiff or whatever. You're doing a counter complaint against them or something like that. Well, that's accepting their jurisdiction. So I don't do that anymore. I've learned my mistake there, and I moved on from that. There is none of that. I destroy their jurisdiction. They have no authority over me. Okay, and by pulling me into their jurisdiction, they violated my unalienable right of due process, and I bring it into that position. I open my court of record, and I try to win the case in the court of record, which you're not going to do on the lower levels usually. I mean, it could happen, but usually it's not going to happen. It's got to go on the federal end. Now, you get up on the federal end, if you happen to get a judge that is the fixer, you could have a problem there because the fixer is willing, and it depends on how big the case is, how big they want this case to be won or lost. The fixer will put himself even so far in jeopardy that he'll accept going to jail if that's what has to happen. Okay, they have these judges out there that they're well taken care of, and they're just the fixer, and they will break the law in front of anyone and do whatever they want. Okay, so if you happen to get that guy, you got a problem. So you should know that pretty quickly, depending on how he responds to your case, and then you can move towards removing him off of that bench, and you can add him into the lawsuit before he can start doing his contempt of court on you and all this other stuff. But, you know, you're going to have to pray for a little wisdom on this to be able to identify that in the beginning. But just by the way he acts and responds, you can see.
Well, right. What you're doing is exactly what I was bringing up with the airplane. As you see this, what would happen if he does this? What happens if he does that? What happens? And you're
totally outside of their box. So
that's correct. You have to think.
Not in that box.
That's what I was kind of going. Yeah.
Look,
common law is common sense, and that's what you're doing. When you're thinking outside of the box, what are you using? You're using common sense.
You're common sense.
You don't become a robot. You don't become a robot and it's, this lever is supposed to make us go down, and I'm going to push it because that's what it says to do. When it's
right,
something opposite is happening, you know?
Yeah,
correct.
Gerard and I are working a case. Gerard and I are working a case, and we had a good laugh when the attorney on the other side said, "Oh, you can't do that. You got to get permission first." Is this guy insane? We responded right to the thing that we're not slaves. We're the masters. What are you talking? Commission for what? To get out of your statutory court that's built on fraud? You know, you lay the truth out, but you know, you do it gently. I mean, I'm using rough, direct language. You know, we do it a little more gently than that, but we lay it out exactly what it is. It's fraud. Yep. And we don't ask permission from nobody. We didn't consent to your process that we should have to ask permission to come out of it. You see?
That's correct.
And that's
okay.
The attitude you have to take. And they don't know what to do with this when you respond properly and you don't look like a nut. You see?
Well, see, and part of the thing that what you brought up was actually I've given up a lot of what you said. I don't have the driver's license. I don't have the voter registration. I don't have many of the other things that are going on with this fraudulent thing because of how many times I've been abused by their system and stood up against them. So I'm with you on a lot of your stuff that you're doing, which is great, because if all of us start thinking outside the box instead of asking, as you say, for permission, we're all going to be winning at a much better level of consciousness. And that's really what NLA is about. It's our consciousness and being aware that there is a system we can direct rather than someone else directing it.
Well, let me tell you something, Anne. They don't even know. They are so dumbed down, and they're so stuck in their statutory system.
Absolutely.
They have a very hard time getting their heads around this stuff. And so you got to check yourself to be a little bit more compassionate, because they really, really don't know what the heck you're talking about. And it takes a few papers, and it takes a little time for them to get their heads around it. But, you know, that doesn't mean they won't be evil.
But they start to see the writing on the wall after a while, though, right?
Right, but they also then start stepping in and countering it. And that's what we don't want. We do not want them countering it. We have to be ready for that countering.
Yeah, so far they have not got anything counter to what we're doing, and I don't think they can. You look at, we go right to the basics. Everything we're doing is right to the basics. We're honest. We're coming in honorably. We're standing on the real law. We look at the law of the land, which is natural law, common law. We use the true history. We don't fudge nothing. We don't make something say that it doesn't say, okay? And we lay it out there. Look, when you bring truth and justice and you come in honorably, there's no argument against that. They can never win. I know that they can never win. I don't care what they throw at me. I know I'll be able to figure a way around it, because they're all about fraud and lies and injustice. We're about justice and truth and honor. It's a whole different. You can't beat that if you have true honesty and justice and honor. You can't defeat it. It's undefeatable.
And that's actually what a lot of what Rod Klass is doing, and he's hitting them with their own method of how a court case goes. And so I'm glad to see you using another one of those and using their own words against them. It's great. This is what we have to do.
You see, part of the trick is when you're in the lower court is you're making your federal case. So you're training the judges down there. Even if they don't get it, you're putting it on the record. By the time it gets to the federal court and that federal judge reads it, you know what happens? He doesn't want to stick his neck out, because he has to say, we're not under the Constitution, go away. He's not willing to do that. So then what happens is they usually don't even want it to go to trial. He goes and calls them and says, look, get this case out of my court, because I got nothing to hang my hat on here. And that's
yeah,
how
one of the key things here is you want to win the case before you go to the federal court. So you want to stay in there and work it all out.
That's the point
when you move
I'm
to
making.
The federal court, it's done.
That's exactly the point. We win before we get there. Now, part of the thing that's interesting is about somehow I got an email about supposedly a federal judge saying all federal courts are administrative courts, which is one of the points that Rod Klass has said. I can't find anybody who really knows which judge said it. It's supposed to be an IRS case.
I got the article.
I got the article, but no judge. The judge they're talking. No, that's... that isn't that judge. If you look at the little caption under her picture, she's supposedly the SEC lawyer, not the judge.
Listen, all statutory courts are administrative. Do you understand?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we know that they're running and operating administrative courts. There's nothing wrong with running an administrative court as long as they post the fact on the document. And then
correct.
Is the fraud. And we go after them for that first and foremost, is that they committed fraud on a court by bringing in an administrative court when it's supposed to be a common law process in court here, a court of record. When you go in and you move it to a court of record. Now, when you go into into their criminal courts, okay, all criminal courts are statutory courts. They're all administrative. When you go into the criminal court, they do not post what it is. Now, they may be feeling confident by posting the fact that it's a criminal thing, okay? And you see, on the one side, it's a criminal court. That's telling you that that's administrative. And on the other side, it's a civil court.
Right.
It's telling you that it's administrative, okay?
Right.
But they are deceptive in that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's fraud. And when
that
you challenge it and turn it upside down and bring it back to reality, especially in the federal courts, you're bringing it back to the Article III court. Now, remember, in the Article III courts, there can be no administrative courts, okay?
That's
you
right.
You can have an administrative court in the county courts. You can have an administrative court in the town courts, the village courts, the city courts. I do not think, I'm not absolutely sure on this one, but I do not think you can have an administrative court in the state. For instance, the New York State Supreme Court, County of Dutchess, Orange, doesn't matter. It's all the New York State Supreme Court. It's just whatever county it's in. But you cannot have an administrative court in that court. And you cannot have an administrative court. That's a court of record, pure and clean and done, okay?
Okay.
But the other courts, they can be both. But they're supposed to. When you go into that court and you move it out of the administrative process and move it into the court of record process, now, and they don't understand that on that level. Maybe some of them do, but generally speaking, they don't know what you're doing or what you think. It's like paying taxes. They think, oh, you're one of those people who think you don't have to pay taxes, huh?
Yeah,
well,
right.
Of course. But their attitude is all really just lost, confused. They don't understand. So,
yeah,
you see, I don't know how much they understand there. And on the state, courts are operating so long under statutory processes, either they break it up into two divisions, the civil courts and criminal courts. That's their heading on it. And the Supreme Court has ruled all criminal courts are statutory courts and therefore not courts of record. The Supreme Court has ruled that. So let's use their rulings, their words, against them.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Simply amazing.
It's simple.
It's simple.
Look, this is not complex stuff. To anybody that this is new to and is not spending time with it, yeah, there's a lot of new stuff here. But look, once you get it and you fill yourself with this language and looking and studying and getting it, once you get it, you say, wow, this is really simple. This is a simple thing to get out of. I can beat them every time in any argument. I don't care what they throw at me. I always feel confident when I write in papers because I know whatever they're throwing at me, I'm going to find a way to get around. Even no matter how destructive it may look verbally when I first look at it, I always say to myself, don't worry about it, John, because they're built on fraud. It's repugnant to the Constitution. I will find lots of stuff that will deny this, and I'll bring it up, and we'll just lay it out, and we'll defeat them on paper.
There you go. I know I got out of a court case. It was a traffic ticket, and the judge said, you go through that door, and you give them your street name and address, and I walked out the other door. That case went away. I did not obey him. I didn't ask permission and thank him very much for telling me which door to go out. I just walked out the door I came in, which was the other door, and he had no recourse. He had no recourse.
Hey, Ann?
I will look at...
Yeah.
Just real quick. It says, in a 45-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Lee Martin May in Atlanta issued an injunction halting administrative law proceedings against Charles Hill, a businessman who the SEC accused, the Security Exchange Commission accused of reaping an illegal $744,000. Anyway, they gave him all his money back, and the judge declared it an administrative court illegal. That's the case.
I would love to get that, Gerard. Can I send you an email and get that so that you can send it to me? Because I sent out this other one, but I didn't feel good because I didn't have really the name of the judge. I'll send you an email tomorrow. Is it your regular email or is it a different one? Are you under NLA?
You send it to the NLA. You can also send it to Gerard53 at Live,
L-I-V-E. Just send it to Gerard at National Liberty Alliance. And when he gets it, you're asking for something, he'll remember and send it back. But we got to move on. It's past our time.
Okay, thank you very much. My phone's dying.
There is one other caller. We'll take that caller before we close down. So let's take Ben from Texas.
He's been
we're
going
to close down after that.
Hang on, I lost my page, John. I got too many windows.
Oh, no.
I'll push the next question.
Yeah, but
get it started.
Ben,
you got the mic. Go right ahead.
We probably put him to sleep with all our talking.
Yeah. Ben, you there?
Unmute your mic, Ben.
Stars,
Texas.
Well, he should be unmuted.
Texas Ben. Well, if he's in Texas, he could be 3 hours earlier than us. So he can't.
Yeah, he's not here yet then. Ben, you've been unmuted. Let me try clicking his button. Let's try that, Ben. You're unmuted. Ben from Texas, going once. Close down. Ben from Texas, going twice. Maybe he's muted
Ben
on
gone.
His own mic. Ben from Texas, third, and we're out. Okay, maybe he walked away or fell asleep.
I thought he was being too patient. We took a long time. We're sorry about that, and you know it happens.
Okay, let's move to the closure here. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. Please, everybody, get involved. Thursday's a very important call because we're going to be talking about the charter, how to create a charter, and we're going to look at the charter, how to create a. The resolutions, and we'll look at the resolutions, and we're going to talk on why it's necessary for all committees of safety to start off with this framework as their charter and this framework as their resolutions. We're going to talk. I tell you what, once you look at it and read through it, and we look, you're going to say right away, yeah, we understand. It's obvious why we have to all do the same thing. Now you could build on that. You can expand your charter. You can expand your resolutions. But we all have to be on the same page. We, the people, we ordained and we established, and that's what we're coming down under. We want our Constitution. We want our Bill of Rights to be protected by our sheriff. And that's what this is all about. And that's why we all have to be on the same page, just like we have to be on the same frequencies when the emergency comes so we can find each other and continue our dialogue and continue building and saving America and doing the things that have to be done. So we have to be on the same frequency when it comes to the radios, the ham radios and the other channels and so on. And we have to be on the same page when it comes to the resolution and when it comes to the charter. So please, Thursday, if you can't be at this meeting, download the meeting and start downloading all the other meetings. Get educated. Read our papers, especially if you're in court and you want to learn how we do the courts. You're going to start to see some papers go through that you'll be able to use in your own cases. You'll be able to use our memorandums, and you can build on them, change them if you want, but it's your case. But look at, frame out your case, take control of your case. Be careful, very carefully look at all the words we, because every word has a meaning and a purpose in our paper. We put nothing in there that doesn't have a reason to be in there. So look at that and try to figure out what it is we're doing, and you can exercise the same stuff in your case and get the same strategy because the truth will always reign over the lie. Okay. With that, I want to say thanks, everyone, for coming. We'll see you next Monday, and please give. We need money. I got to keep asking for money. I'm sorry, but I have to. We can't accomplish our goals without money. Give money, please. Thank you. Good night.